Howdy, folks. Widget Walls from NeedCoffee.com here. Listen, on behalf of myself and the rest of the Weekend Justice League, thanks for downloading our chaos. And I know some of you might be thinking, oh hell, here he is again to talk about money. And I'm not thrilled with recording these either, except for one crazy thing. These little messages are working. So to those of you out there who have already gone to NeedCoffee.com/support and set up a quick and easy monthly donation to the cause of keeping Need Coffee afloat, seriously, thank you. Any contribution, no matter how small, helps a great deal. And if every listener to the show would just throw 99 cents at it each week, the server, the bandwidth, all of that would be a lot easier to pay for. Anyway, needcoffee.com/support is where you can set that up. And seriously, thanks in advance for your help. And thanks for listening to me ramble. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey, so how was your honeymoon?
Hey, it was great, actually. We were in Zihuatanejo, Mexico, and it was fantastic. It was we were at La Capella Resort, and I highly recommend it. It was choice. Yeah, I'll be curious to see if when Jen started to come down the aisle, if you had a camera facing all of us that were up there.
Yes.
Okay. Because good. Then maybe you caught it. You might have caught one of the rare instances of the wedding. You might have caught my dad spitting out his gum.
Oh, seriously? No way.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm serious. Actually, dad did two things that were, one was funny and one was funny in a kind of like, oh my God, that's, at least it's not me kind of a way, you know? And the first one, okay, so I was already up there with the officiant, and then my dad and my sister came down the aisle, and then Mark and Jen's sister came down the aisle, and then there was a long pause, and then Shag and Janet came down the aisle. And then the ring bearer started to come down the aisle,
mm-hmm.
and he dropped the pillow with the rings on it,
mm-hmm.
right at the stairs. And I hear from my dad at that point, he says, fumble on the 2-yard line.
Oh, and my I'm God, like, was this on your honeymoon?
No. This was at the wedding.
This is coming in late in the...
Yeah.
So the ring bearer who dropped the pillow,
which I thought was very adorable and very cute.
It was cute. He's a cute little, like a 4-year-old. And I mean, there was this step that he had to step down, and it's, you know, for adult sized people, it's a normal step, but for a kid, it's, you know, it's a little bit formidable. And he drops the pillow. And my dad says, fumble on the 2-yard line. I'm like, oh, Dad. But, you know, just you can't laugh, but of course you're laughing. And then so the ring bearer came up and the flower girl had come up, and then Jen and her dad start to come down the aisle, and everybody turns to see the bride, and my dad realizes he still has gum in his mouth, so he spits the gum into his hand and into the bushes while everybody's back is turned to him. And everybody's looking at the bride.
Yeah, I may or may not have caught it. I'll have to look. But because everyone stood up, they're kind of blocking my shot. So
interesting.
Oh, well.
Well, I thought that was priceless. I was like, well, I mean, if you're going to get caught with gum, at least you got sense enough to spit it out when no one's looking at you.
But you saw it.
Yeah, I saw it. And my sister saw it. But we didn't report him to the one person that it would truly matter to, and that's my mom. So,
but she listens to this podcast, though, doesn't she?
Right. She'll know as soon as Friday comes around because she'll hear the podcast.
That's cool that your mom is supportive.
Well, she doesn't support me. She supports Widge and John mostly.
Yeah.
She tolerates you.
Most people do.
Yeah, you know, is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, did you have a good honeymoon? Was it
fun?
We
did. It really was. It was great. It was a great, great resort in Mexico, and I highly recommend it.
Cool. Where at?
It was in Zihuatanejo.
Uh-huh.
/ Ixtapa. Don't ask me to spell it because I can't.
Can you spell that for me?
Is that with a Q or an X?
There is an X. There is an X and there is a Z. It was La Capella Resort. And it was excellent.
Cool.
Yes.
I played it. So I went to the that hotel that didn't have any music, though. It's its sister. It's called Acapella. Hold on.
Did you go zip lining? Was there zip lining?
No, we did not. But we took a cooking class while we were there.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can take those here at Publix.
Well, aprons, yeah.
That's not nearly as fun. And this one was nice because the chef at the resort took us into town and we went through the local market and we got to pick out fruits and vegetables and some cheeses. He didn't buy any meat, poultry, or fish, but we went through the local market and saw all that. And then we came back to the resort and we made some food.
Well, that's cool.
And then what else did you make?
Oh my God, did you have to like haggle over your food? You know, over the stuff? It's like, no, I'd rather pay 5 pesos for those tamales.
Well, you can do that, but since he was wearing the resort chef's coat and everything like that, it pretty much, you know,
jacked up your price.
You were giving him the right price, not the, gringo price.
But you could have learned the expertise of haggling.
I've worked in the insurance industry, Rox.
Oh, all right. I understand.
Specifically,
I work in printing. I understand.
Speaking of haggling, Scott's here. Yeah. I gave blood today. I'm a little feverish. I think I might.
You gave blood. How much did they want from you? You know, Kim's brother went to the blood bank or the blood drive at Dragon Con, and they asked for more.
You know,
so he gave like 2 pints, which you're really not supposed to do. And Kim was all kind of freaked out because, you know, he was feeling lightheaded and everything, and she had to make sure he was okay. It's like, wow. That's weird. I'm like, why did they ask for more? She said, oh, I guess they're out of, you know, whatever type blood that he had.
He was just that tasty.
Yeah. Or that. So, Scott, you doing summer school classes?
No.
No? So, what are you doing for your summer?
Now, I'm...
Do you have a job?
Not yet. Hopefully, I will.
Summer school? Summer job? Deliver a newspaper?
No,
you can deliver newspapers. Huh? See, I'm trying to help you out.
No, I agree, but that's pretty.
How about
much...
an ice cream parlor, Scott? That would be great. You and a little pinstripe. Oh my gosh! Do you know what? No, this would be great, Scott. You can wear your number 2 jacket from The Prisoner. If you're going to work at a ice cream parlor.
Well, the only ice cream parlor I know of in town is already fully employed, so they're looking for help.
So you just show up one day?
Yeah, no,
just show up. Stay.
Just show up. The corner, you're around the counter, and say, you know, one
stupid.
No,
that's kind of creepy.
All right.
You and kind of creepy. Those two things don't go together.
What?
It's like I don't know, Hall and Oates being together or something.
Shut up.
It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Shut up.
It's like
S and M.
S and M?
Yes.
Hi, Widge.
He refuses to acknowledge that this podcast exists.
Oh, dear.
Widge?
Which Widge?
I would say, an even dozen would be fine.
Was that a recording?
How many pieces do you think Scott wants?
I would say, an even dozen would be fine.
How many pesos are to a dollar?
I would say, an even dozen would be fine. I mean,
is that accurate, Serv?
Yeah, actually, that's right on. How many voodoo donuts would you eat at one sitting?
I would say, an even dozen would be fine. I mean,
really? Even like the Texas Challenge, that's like six donuts in one. Could you eat how many could you eat?
I would say, an even dozen would be fine. I mean,
sir, are a machine.
Well, I mean, but so don't you feel bad about eating all those donuts when there's people starving in Africa?
Screw the kids.
Like your dog.
Oh, okay. Well, that seems fine.
This is true. He doesn't offer us donuts.
Just the tip.
Oh, ew.
Is that the game?
Was that impressive for you?
Not really.
Oh, why? What do you need, Rox?
What do I need? I need somebody to come here and clean my house. Do you know? I knew this one girl. Get this. She actually put an ad in Craigslist for a slave, quote, air quotes, to just come, you know, some sort of fetish thing, just to come clean her house. And she wound up getting guys that would call up and I'd clean her house, sure, you know, because they were all submissive types. So, just want somebody to clean my house.
Hold on.
I hate doing it. It's constant.
John, are you going to play the one I was trying to get you to play?
I didn't. I was trying to take care of technical issues. I would like to point out that Widge's point saying that, you know, we can't hear him. I'm thinking we can hear him perfectly fine.
I heard him. He wants to eat a dozen
voodoo donuts, right?
Voodoo donuts.
What
he knows the exchange rate of pesos to dollars.
What else is going on, Widge? What else would you like? What else do you like besides donuts?
I like women naked.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Well, I mean, I like that. I'm good with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that seems reasonable.
Sure. Hey, Lee popped. Oh, hey, Lee.
What do you say to the naked women?
Check out my Saturn V.
Oh, okay.
How does that go over?
All right, I jacked up just a little bit.
That's what I thought.
Just a wee bit.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Levine. Shoyle.
I'm having massive, massive Skype problems.
Which take this completely whatever way you want, but you're a little hot right now, so if you could turn your mic down just a bit.
Okay, hang on.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, he is.
All right, hang on.
Turn it down. Turn it all the way down.
How's that? Is that better?
No, bring it up a little. Slower.
Slower?
Slower.
A little left. You like
now all the way up.
Rotate it.
Sherlock Holmes. All right. Does that work? Is that better?
Bring it up a little bit. It's weird because when you were talking a minute ago, it was like it was peeking me out. It's peeking me out, man. Peeking
me out. That's because he was yelling at everybody.
Is that better? Just keep talking and we'll...
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't want to do this shit of testing my microphone.
All right.
That may be the title and it won't even be something that we can reference in the actual episode.
Oh, that would be great.
In fact, we're just going to call back to all these jokes.
Now
we can go back to recording.
Now we can go back to being on the podcast.
All right. Now back to Justice, already in progress.
All right, so the number one thing that I wanted to talk about that I've been dying to talk about since I saw it earlier.
Prometheus?
No, even more than Prometheus. This is even
playing Civilization for 10 years?
No, this is even more than that. Although those are both things I want to talk about.
Verizon's new plan to screw everyone?
What do you mean? Isn't it the same as the old plan, but just revitalized?
Yeah,
fair enough.
There's new paperwork.
So
you're going to make me talk about how much the LA Kings deserve that.
No, not even that. Even more important, because there is an expert that we have on this podcast that I think is well-placed to comment on this particular news story, more so than any other podcast on the internet.
Oh, my God. Circus peanuts does not cause cancer.
Well, Rox, you are the right person, but that is the wrong thing.
Circus peanuts, children. Circus peanuts. Wait,
hang on. Survey says.
All right, so So, Rox, here's I don't know if you knew about this, but a German designer sued Turner Broadcasting and TNT, saying that Falling Skies had an inappropriate font in its title sequence.
What? Oh, no! Okay.
Inappropriate really? As in naughty?
So, okay, so let me explain.
No. Okay,
The guy who basically developed a font, which he called Anthropolymorphics.
Okay.
Which sounds like that was a 60s punk band, was it not, Tuffley?
They opened for the MC5.
There you go. So basically, he said that the lettering that they were using in their marketing materials was too close to that. Now, what I found interesting is that the federal government, I did not know this, the federal government has said that typefaces are not subject to copyright.
They're not. No.
However, font software is protectable, and the licensing agreement on the font software got blown away. So basically, they've settled, and that's pretty much it. So the second season is and probably final season is about to launch. And I thought, since we have the internet premier apologist,
is it the actual logo of where it says Falling Skies?
I don't even know. If I look,
because it's kind of interesting. It kind of looks not, you know, if you look at like Stalin type typefaces, it's got some sort of it's quasi serif and then sans serif. Ah. It's sort of a mix that you have the word F that has a little doohickey that's going off to the right or off to the left. Same thing with the L's. This is all upper, all caps. The thing about fonts is you could change a minor thing off of a font and call it something new. It's sort of funny that this is brought up because I watched Drive last night, and I'll have to amend my whole Albert Brooks thing. But they used a fucking typeface I couldn't believe for it. And it was called Mistral, and they kind of altered it. And it's a shit font. It was done – I forgot. I think it was done in the 80s, but it's this like little handwritten typeface, and it's horrible. But they used – instead of using it just for the word drive, they used it for everything. And it is like one of the worst fonts to actually, you know, read. It's horrible. Yeah, I almost stopped watching it just because of that. And I've done that. I've seen, films where it's like, oh, no, that's not right. And then I hear the music. I'm like, oh, no, done.
So basically, Rox, just to illustrate the point further, if you were 5 minutes into The Godfather and suddenly Comic Sans came up on the screen, you'd be out of there.
Oh, yeah.
So, Widge.
Yes.
I'm actually reading more into this lawsuit. I'm actually reading the court documents here, and it's not that he's upset about the font. He's upset that it's actually associated with this show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He said any other show's fine. This one.
Here's the thing about when you create a logo or something, depending on how well or how, you know, you space letters and stuff, the minute you put a little TM or an R next to it, and you can get that copy written. So that's yours. If they didn't, okay, I can maybe see if they illegally acquired said font from this guy, you know, that they found, you know, I can see them going, oh, you know, because it's a popular show. And this guy wants, you know, he's sort of a bad apple thing. But, you know, his own font, just looking at this right now, it's based on something else. So there's like no true font. I'm sorry. It's like stories.
Hey,
there's
Rox,
only so many. Yes.
You might want to be careful about throwing around that popular show thing, because really it's TNT.
Well, it is TNT.
How popular of a show do you have to be to get renewed on TNT?
Well, let me point out that he is so upset that he's associated with this television show that he wants all DVDs and anything that bears the result of the unauthorized use of the copyright software to be turned over for destruction.
But the thing is there's no... Okay, here's the
thing. Can we help?
I was about to volunteer
your
myself.
Your fonts come in either true type... Or
not true type.
True type.
Lie type.
False type.
If it's false type, but there's like two kinds. So if he had a true type, there's no software. You're using something else like InDesign or something to design. You're not using I can't believe this. This is a stupid, stupid lawsuit.
You know, it's a shame TNT canceled Hawthorne.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Here's what you do. You position yourself on a lawsuit. You position yourself so that what you're asking for seems almost excessive. So in this case, everything that has his font involved with it should be recalled and destroyed. Or if you'd like to settle for, say, $800,000, we'll probably go with that too. So it's all a matter of positioning.
And here's another thing. Are they using a Mac version or a PC version? There's...
sir, I don't know. I think I would settle for a Noah Wiley being recalled and destroyed.
Some of us like Falling Skies.
Now, Tuffley, I think what happened is that Noah Wiley has got a tattoo using that font, so therefore he should be destroyed.
It could be. I'm just saying.
By court order.
I don't know. If they downloaded, if this guy had the font up for sale and they acquired it legally, there should be absolutely no problem with it. You know, if this guy designed it and you can go to a place, you know, and he uploaded it to like, you know, any of the font companies that will purchase your font and then you could download, you know, like I said, a true typeface or something else, or they may have even, you know, altered it themselves. I mean, you know, it'd be interesting on what the schematics and the design stuff from the design company that did the actual logo stuff for Falling Skies. So, I don't know.
Well, there you go. I knew we had the internet's foremost font expert on the podcast. But
his font's not that original. I'm saying that right now.
Neither is Falling Skies.
Yeah, that too. But my coworker uses a font. It's a Soviet font that he's altered. So it's based off of that, and it's also based on like a Franklin Gothic.
Well, the Soviets can't sue anymore because they don't exist.
They don't exist. No. I mean, so
he's got that going for him.
So for this guy to say this is a totally unique font, no, it isn't. I'm saying that right now. So TNT, just give me a check. I'll be your expert.
She'll be glad to testify.
I will be glad to testify.
TNT, yeah. She'll be here in September. You can deliver it to her personally.
Very true.
Oh, wow. Okay, frivolous. So,
join us next week on Weekend Justice when we find out who sued Rizzoli and Isles.
Oh.
Dag.
I'm waiting for Franklin and Bash. Or maybe they're going to be handling the case.
Oh.
Because that seems like it would be right up their alley for that show. I'm seeing a trend here.
What you need is, like with TNT, since you guys are talking about how nobody watches them, is that the thing to do would be to treat the shows on TNT like comics, where you can have your own thing, like Men of a Certain Age or whatever, but then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's summer, so therefore you have to have a tie-in with Falling Skies?
Yes.
And it might be difficult since they canceled like a couple years ago.
Well, see, but again, I don't know because I don't keep up with TNT just like everyone else.
Basically, TNT's original series philosophy is The Closer and Leverage and, oh yeah, those other shows.
Yeah, which The Closer just ended too, didn't it?
And it's White Collar.
Oh, okay. It's about
White Collar.
No,
White
Collar is USA. That's
USA. Oh, wait, TNT's about to get something really good, Tuffley. Coming back from the 80s, baby. Dallas, The Next Generation.
Oh, that's right. We need to talk about summer TV.
So as I said, The Closer and Leverage and then those other shows.
Nice. So before we could get to summer TV, so
Prometheus
then, yes. Because I know, Lee, you'll fall asleep in the next 5 minutes, so we need to get this.
So has the internet produced the Prometheus-Madagascar crossover yet, mashup?
No, sadly no.
Damn.
I do. I am upset that Madagascar 3 got more money than it this weekend. The last things I saw said it was going to get more money. So,
which would be hilarious if you did do the mashup, and it would be like that stupid ass Chris Rock thing where he's going da 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 Zeno da 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 Afro da Zeno Afro. Okay. That would be great. And then basically,
actually that should be the song that Theron's doing push-ups to after she gets out of the pod.
So, question, who on the podcast has not seen Prometheus?
Me.
I haven't, but I don't think we're going to yet, so it's okay. I can be spoiled and forget about it later.
Sir,
but I did see Alien this weekend as a refresher, hi, and then I never got to the theater to see Prometheus.
Well, you're already ahead of the game then, sir.
I saw Alien again, too.
So, sir, do you care if we talk from end to end about Prometheus, or should we abstain?
No, go ahead. Go right ahead.
All right. So, Lee, you brought it up. You go first.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. Are there plot holes? Yes. There are huge plot holes. Guess what, folks? It's a Ridley goddamn Scott film. If you expected there not to be plot holes, and if you expected things to be resolved at the end, fuck you. It's a Ridley Scott film. Be happy at the end.
I am correct in assuming that the plot holes in this film were not attempted to be filled with Russell Crowe.
That's right.
They were not with Russell Crowe, nor were they filled
with anything else.
Yeah, with anything else. I mean, which, as you said, it is something I actually, there were some things that I liked about it, because when you leave it, you still actually want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And what did you and all that?
This is like the last time I ever want to think about this film.
No, I loved it. I enjoyed it.
The more I've thought about it, the more I've decided that I was actually very much too kind to it in my review. And I think there's more holes than plot.
I haven't seen it. And here, I find this interesting, and I just want to interject real quick.
Sure.
Widge, you're saying, and I haven't seen your review because I kind of wanted to avoid spoilers and I wasn't sure how spoilerific it would be. But I keep seeing the same headlines about Prometheus. Visually stunning and beautiful and meek in terms of story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott.
No, I don't.
That's not always true.
No.
Do you know who wrote this? Damon Lindelof.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Lee.
Ridley Scott wrote it.
Lee, yes. Blade Runner.
But I'm sorry. Blade Runner has holes in it, and I don't think it's that great either. I think it is, again, visually stunning and interesting characters.
Yes, but the problem that I have with Prometheus is you're saying, do you expect things to be resolved? Well, yes, one or two would be nice, you know? And then afterwards, when you do interviews and you go, oh, yes, well, we're going to answer those questions in the sequel. You know what? Fuck you. Because
Seriously, that's what they said?
Yes.
Basically, he never does sequels anyway, right?
Well, no, but remember, sorry, you go, Edge.
No, I was just saying, that was correct, Rox, until now.
Well, but a part of it is also that he does feel that he got a little bit cheated out of the Alien sequel, because he wanted to do an Alien sequel, and then it went to Cameron.
Well, it went
well,
a lot of
it came out.
It went a lot
it
of points
everywhere.
Good. True. Point.
Well, but my only thing is that none of the character motivation made any sense whatsoever.
His accent made absolutely no sense. Idris Elba's. I'm like, where the hell are you from?
I'm sorry, but
it was like this Cajun thing. It was this Cleveland thing. I'm like, what? Thing.
It was kind of all over America thing. But I will just say this: anybody that can quote Stills, while playing an accordion gets to go to bed with Charlize Theron, he wins the title of badass motherfucker. I am sorry. He was probably the best thing in the whole movie. He and Michael Fassbender. Wow.
Well, Fassbender, yes, and I actually
like
Charlize Theron as well.
I like too.
But I mean, they could not save what was basically a script that, the more I thought about it, the less it made sense. I mean, I wish I could have done my review and never thought about the film again, because it keeps surfacing in my brain and another question comes up, which makes me go, wait, what?
And so, once again, you can now not have to see Lost either.
Apparently.
Lost in microcosm.
Oh my God.
Apparently. But yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I always am happy when I never go into a film not wanting to enjoy it. So if someone can actually enjoy a film that I think is
Sex and the City 2.
No, if you can enjoy Sex and the City 2, more power to you. Why would I want anyone to go and waste 2 hours of their life? Especially in the case of Prometheus, 2 hours that felt more like four.
I will say I agree with you. It is very odd. And I don't know if it's a compliment. It's just odd that it did seem like a much longer movie. It wasn't a movie that I wanted to be over. That's not it. Like, I was looking at my watch going, dear God, when's it going to be over? But it did seem like a much longer movie than it was. Like, when you said that, because I didn't see your review till after I'd already seen it.
Really?
I would agree with that. Yeah, no, we went to see it Friday night. We actually had a date night. So, yeah. That's an odd date night movie as well, but, you know, hey.
So, yeah, from what I've managed to piece together, did the trailer give up the whole film?
No.
No.
Now, as you watch the film, you can put the pieces together from the trailer, but what they did was, the trailers, I actually enjoy the trailer more than the film. I wish someone would turn that trailer into a film. That would be great. Because basically they cut bits out. They cut like lines of dialogue and put them over different scenes so that you got sort of the feeling of the film without giving anything away, if that makes any sense.
Wasn't that sort of the trick he did on the Aliens trailer? The original Alien trailer?
I thought the original Aliens trailer
was just the egg.
Yeah, the original. I don't know
original,
if there was
the original was just the egg. And
yeah,
then that
the original,
whole,
original. Yeah.
You know, in space, no one can hear you scream. That's when you created.
But I know there was a B trailer.
Trailers where, you know, you're like, wow, what is that? That's why we went. I saw Alien
really
the
trailer. Because wasn't that really the trailer they did before they had actually shot anything from the film?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I know they had one that was later.
Yeah, but I don't
know. Now, and this is actually, which I actually had this question for you, because this is a movie I would let Kidlet go see. If he wanted to see this, I'd let him go see it.
Really?
I would. We started really talking about it, and I actually had with one of the Unique Geeks a discussion on Twitter about it. The only scene I can figure out that really made it R was her scene in the little surgical thing.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked up.
That's the only scene that to me really pushed it in. And I'm trying not to spoil it because we have some people who haven't seen it, but that one was pretty damn gory. And as somebody who just had a C-section, I just want to say, yeah, it's not like that.
All right. Speaking of the horror situation out of this film, I would agree that honestly, there was nothing new. We've seen all the instances of how aliens get into you.
Yeah.
I thought it was really clever of the Fassbender and the little dot of goo into the water, into the wine. That was clever. You didn't expect that. Well, there was foreshadowing. But on a whole, you know, the alien going, you know, wrapping his round, you know, with the Rosencrantz, Guilderstern's.
Those guys were so before. Awful. Yeah.
You saw that kind of, and you knew it was coming. So. Yeah. As far as the horror, okay, and then the whole thing of her getting into the pod, and there's the other creature. It's stuff we have seen. There's nothing new. Alien, the first one, was new. It was the first time you saw a robot screw somebody else, you know, trying to kill them. you know, other than, you know, 2001. But I mean, here was an Android doing this. So especially after you have everybody going, oh, well, you know, there's the Asimov 3, you know, laws of robotics.
Yeah, especially you have, if you think about it that way.
So,
yeah.
So all of a sudden it was new when you had Ash doing this, where there was a reprieve with Bishop, but it's like, okay, well, we've seen, we on a whole, it was a gorgeous film. If you had nothing but the soundtrack and no dialogue, which I've done that with Baron Munchausen before, it's a gorgeous film.
I'd probably
really
like that
is.
Better that way.
On a whole, I liked it. You know, it was I didn't mind it, but there was absolutely nothing new, nothing horror-like. And just to get back into my reprieving of Albert Brooks real quick, his killing scene of, you know, Bryan Cranston, that was fucking new. I've never seen anybody, you know.
Yeah, that was one of the few good parts of that movie.
Yeah, where he pretty much kills this guy by going straight down the arm and saying, oh no, don't worry, it'll be over soon. I'm like, holy shit, that was new. That was fucking new.
I gotta know whatever movie you're talking about.
Drive.
Okay.
So anyway, there was really no new horror. There was nothing in the theater. Unlike, and I remember this when I was in the theater, you know, when I first saw Alien, no one saw this coming. Everybody screamed when, you know, the alien popped out of John Hurt. No, but, you know, that was new. There was nothing, there was no jump moment in the theater whatsoever.
Well, Rocks, I think that's actually very, very telling too, because I thought about it, because I did watch Alien after it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all these little parts of Alien that you never know exactly when it's going to jump out. You never, I mean, that's to me the scariest part of Alien. You know it's there and you just don't know where the hell it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the alien hiding itself in the machinery and then popping out. Okay, well, yeah, been there, done that. You guys aren't going to scare me anymore with that. There's more
she
than
had,
one.
She had, you know, if you skip over to Alien 3, the prison thing, she had an alien in her. Come on. There was nothing new.
Well, and I think that was the thing too about this, because somebody was saying to me, I don't like horror. And I was like, neither do I, but I like the alien movies. And they were like, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't compute. And I'm like, well, after Alien 2, I've always found them much more suspenseful than horror. Because after Alien, nothing can scare you.
Right.
Sorry.
That's where I will always say Alien is a horror film. Alien 2 and on are more, like you said, thriller, suspense. The second one is more action adventure,
right,
if anything.
Well, I look at Aliens more like the action flick. Because you couldn't do that again. You couldn't do the scary thing again.
No.
And to Cameron's credit, he knew that and tried to take it into a different direction.
I went the opposite direction and just blew up shit, which I
And honestly, I liked 3. I'm like one of the rare people that likes 3. I like 3.
Rocks,
it is David Fincher doing what David Fincher does best, isn't it?
Well, with a studio basically writing his ass. But no, 3 is not as 3 has gotten a bad rap. It's not great, but it is watchable. Now, the number one thing I think that bothers me about Prometheus and what it, because I mean, you know, it is, to all intents and purposes, it may not lead directly into Alien, but it is a prequel. The number one thing that bothers me is I really liked the concept of the aliens, the xenomorphs, as just this animal, just this alien out there that was like an elemental force that just basically, when you ran into it, it was a bad day.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea that, I'm sorry, it's a WMD. That to me really bugs me, because that seems to cheapen it, because I think it's
so the fact that it's a biological weapon, kind of, is that the part that...
Well, didn't they try to play that angle with Aliens versus Predator?
I think what they were
they saw the aliens as a prey species.
I know, but there was that whole pyramid thing and whatever that they were just overrun, and they had to, you know, if they got out of hand, they had the safety button to kill anything.
Right. Well, I mean, that's been established that the predators use the aliens for making hunts more interesting. I mean, that was basically set up from the first comic book. But my point is that I like the concept of, you know, it's like in The Gray. Liam Neeson is fighting wolves. The wolves are just there. They're a natural thing. And this is what they do, right? Mm-hmm. You run into them the wrong way and they will fuck you up. There's no, that's like saying there's a great prequel in which there's like a Bond villain who's the evil wolf master.
This is the same complaint a lot of people had with Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Hold on, I'll explain. In the original,
you know, they just had Michael Myers just kill his sister because he was just fucking evil. But in the remake, he had him have like this white trash mom. He was like, he had a bad house life and all this sort of thing. So it does sort of show that some people want an explanation for some reason. And like you said, a lot of times it just messes things up.
Well, wasn't the backstory that you're talking about, wasn't that kind of established in the sequels, in the original sequels?
No, not that I'm aware of.
No.
I think that basically Weyland-Yutani, their entire thing from jump has been, hey, we could turn this into a weapon.
Yes.
But right. I don't think it was ever, oh, well, they're a weapon. They may be naturally a weapon, but they were naturally what they were. Yeah. And to me, that was what was interesting, is that they were just this thing. It was just like, you know, it's like the zombies in Walking Dead. They're just here. We've got to fucking deal with it.
Right.
And the explanation does cheapen. No, you're right.
I would agree with you on that too.
Well, I was actually asking about the Halloween thing. I knew that the backstory and the aliens wasn't set up, but I thought the backstory in the Halloween films was Michael Myers' backstory was in like 2 and 4 and 5 and
I think so. I think it was in 2.
Yeah.
Because we still had Donald Pleasance with us, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Before I forget, Rox.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw my post earlier, but I have some terrific news for you.
What?
There is a collector's edition Blu-ray of Halloween 3 that's coming, I think, in September.
Yes!
Oh, God.
I knew that would make you happy.
Look at it. Did you hear that? Did you hear that utter glee in her little...
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Dear listeners, that is where conviction breaks down, and it's just surreal.
It's that's just happy little glee.
Authentic Rox right there.
But which I will agree with you on that too. I'm not because I think they could have done it differently. There was nothing that said that they had to create the xenomorphs. They could have just accidentally found them. I mean, if you go back to Alien, all you really see is that there is something that burst out of his chest and he's giving you a warning. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. And I you know, as I said, I enjoyed the movie, but there are plot holes and things that you look at and you go, I don't want to. I'm almost to the point where I don't want to think about it much more because I'm going to start hating it.
No, Lee, don't. Seriously, because you're. I can tell from the sound of your voice, you're on the brink, and I don't want to make you doubt. So I want you to enjoy your film, okay?
I did enjoy it. And I mean, I just always had this kind of really weird love of the Alien movies, and I it was really funny because when I said I wanted to go, my dad was like, you want to go, really? And I'm like, I love those movies. Like, yeah,
see the exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah, no.
Which I still need to go see, Rox, but yeah.
I, you know what, Rox, I probably do want to see that, but it's something that I don't really have to see on a big screen. I think I'd be fine on DVD on that one.
Okay.
So I don't have Netflix, but yeah, that's what I could see. Oh, and Rox,
yes.
Troll Hunter is now on Amazon Prime streaming.
Oh yeah, people see that. That is actually a good low budget film.
Yeah, awesome. I saw that the other day, and I went, "Oh my God, Rox has got to know about that." Yeah. But I think the only other thing that really did bother me, even watching the movie, was those were some of the dumbest damn scientists I have ever seen. And I have seen dumb scientists. I watched 8 pages of the X-Files.
I think you need to watch more Classic Who.
I have seen really dumb scientists and
Rox knows what I'm talking
about. I don't know. Mobius was okay. He was evil and he wasn't that stupid. He was just
I will say this. I will put this to the entire panel here. Is that is a post that we need to collaboratively do on Need Coffee, the top 10 worst scientists in fiction.
Oh my God, yes.
Okay, well, the top two are the two guys who can't find their way out of the cave.
Oh, Rhodes and Guildenstern, since they didn't really have names.
Oh, okay. Was it funny?
They're watchy things.
What, was it funny for anyone else that the entire supporting cast seemed to be from other stuff of recent, like you had Lysa Arryn from Game of Thrones, you had the assassin from Borges, you had Rafe Spall, who's been in basically everything, you had, I think his name is Benedict, his last name is Wong, the guy who was Hogan in Thor. I was just sitting there going, wow, it's like all these people who are taking a break from the other franchises that they're in.
Yeah, and nobody had names, really.
Oh, God,
that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, did anybody else think, Charles, I don't know what the hell his name was. See, none of the names are sticking with me except for David, which is exactly what it was supposed to happen, because David's name was the only supposed to stay with you. But whoever the boyfriend was.
Holloway.
Okay. Did he not look like Ed Hardy to the guy who's going to be playing Bane, like his cousin or something?
Yeah, Tom Hardy. Yeah, that's been mentioned that Tom Hardy wants his DNA back. Yeah.
I just kept looking at him going, I don't think that's Tom. Is it? I mean, maybe he was a little. Huh?
Yeah.
Maybe he looked great before he went and played Bane. What?
You're not the only one.
I thought I was losing it.
Well, you were, but not for reason.
Oh, good. Not for that. Yay. Okay.
You know, the interesting thing about the whole, just say about the crew in general, when you look back at Alien, they're driving around in like a space dump truck. Okay.
Right.
But it's their space dump truck.
Yep.
You know, they have the little, quirky, I hate you, but, we'll stick together, because it's like, yeah, Fat Kodo and what's Stock was?
Harry Stanton.
Stanton. They were great. But there was nothing. Even though these are all employees of her that is Ice. I mean, I can't even remember Waylon, whatever her name was. What was her name?
Victoria. Wasn't it Victoria?
Meredith was her first name.
Oh, yeah.
And Vickers. Meredith Vickers.
Oh, and just so you know, Tuffley, there's a nod to Doctor Who. Elizabeth Shaw. Just so you know. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, if you want to look at the main person is David. And that whole... What?
But then she is one of the stupid scientists, right?
Ah, she got the short shrift. Really?
No, she's a stupid scientist.
Doctor Who.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you're calling it Elizabeth Shaw, and then if you're calling it Shaw, and then the Shaw in Prometheus is actually a dumb scientist, that wasn't really it.
There were no smart scientists in
Prometheus. There were none.
Sorry.
Stupid science.
Not only.
Okay, then not really, then, Rox.
In fact, here's what I think is happening. Right. I think we need to understand there's something that Kirkman said about Walking Dead, and I think I mentioned it before, that I think really is important to establish in the world that you're creating. In that he said that Walking Dead takes place basically in a world in which, zombies didn't become a pop culture sensation. There was no Night of the Living Dead. So it's not like they've all seen, it's not like in Shaun of the Dead where they, or Return of the Living Dead, where there's an awareness. They're coming into this cold. So I can only assume that in Prometheus, there is no such thing as a horror or science fiction genre whatsoever. Because it's obvious that none of them have ever, I just want to do a top 10 things to make sure that you do based on Prometheus. Number one, I don't care how fucking great the atmosphere is. Don't take your fucking helmet off.
No, ever, people.
No matter how cute the giant worm looks.
That is okay. Let me put it to you this way, Lee.
Try to make friends. No.
Yeah. That here, let me put it in context for you. That was a critter that even our own Dindrain would said, "Fuck you," and blown it away.
Yeah.
That's how bad the critter was.
Look, I learned this from X-Files. Black goo is never good.
Yeah. So that means,
what else do we need?
So let's snap this back a little bit. So in Prometheus, in the Prometheus world, in the Prometheus /alien/aliens world, that means you can't have had X-Files. Obviously, because black goo. You couldn't have had Lost because, you know, obviously, questions that don't ever have answers to them is not something they ever ran into.
Right. Unless they just canceled it midway.
Exactly.
Is knocking
Alcatraz
on when they can't breathe, when they shouldn't be able to breathe or be alive outside, don't open the fucking door. That's
so
really
C-Lab. They couldn't have had C-Lab either.
No. What else, Widge? What else we got here?
Oh, God. There's so much. But no, I think the other thing, you know what the problem is? Toughly, I think you hit it right on the head. They had no X-Files. They had nothing that could warn them against black goo. But you know what? I bet they had Dallas. So they're only thinking oil.
Well, it is terrifying. Half of the crew thought they were all there. Terrifying.
Well, if they landed on the planet and Larry Hagman was already there, they should have left.
Oh my God. That would be the most Toughly. That would be the most awesome revamp of Martian Chronicles ever.
Oh my God. You know what? His eyebrows could be tentacles.
So, let's just say they landed on the planet, they get out, they've got their helmets on, and the first thing he says is genie and yells it really loud.
Which the other thing that got to me at the end was when David said, well, there are more ships.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure when you guys were up high coming in, you saw at least 3 or 4 big domes. And you've already realized one dome equals a ship. This is not tough.
Well, Lee, you have to
do math, and I could figure this one out.
You have to understand this is an android who basically has been manipulating alien technology throughout the entire movie, and no one seems to bat an eye. I mean, that was amazing. It's just like he walks up and starts manipulating shit, and I'm going, how the fuck are you doing that? So you're telling me because you've studied the Icelandic language, suddenly,
you
now granted,
some of their shit, yeah.
Granted, I couldn't tell the difference between Icelandic and like Dothraki or Ferengi or fucking anything, right? But because you've spent 2 years basically using Rosetta Stone, you can now fucking manipulate alien technology.
Well, Rosetta Stone and taking off a few breaks to listen to a few Bjork records.
And here's something. How come Nikki kept tabs on David? It's like when he opened the door, they're like, how'd you do that? Hello? Start hanging around the blonde guy because obviously he knows something.
Obviously he knows a little more than you guys are giving him credit for. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
Hey, where's David? He's been gone for like 4 hours.
But I still did enjoy it.
Yeah.
I did until I started thinking about it. So stop thinking about it, Lee. Stop thinking about it. So, all right.
All right. Okay. We need to do a wrap up of Mad Men.
Okay. Oh, well, you guys can do that when I am now. I'm going to go to bed now because I actually am off of physical therapy now and I'm able to actually out. I'm not off the meds yet, but I'm off the physical therapy. But now that I work out, I'm exhausted.
I understand. So Lee, does that mean you're falling back on mental therapy now?
No, I'm hoping I get to fall back on beer therapy.
Sweet. Let me know.
I know. I can't wait. So you guys have a lovely time. Serve, it is wonderful to hear you back, but now you get to talk about Mad Men, which I don't watch anyway. I know you all can't understand. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 All right, you know, before we should do Mad Men, I want to talk about the civilization thing, and then we can talk about television. But We should probably, now that Lee's gone, do introductions.
Yeah, that is the traditional way.
Yes.
Yeah, someone has to leave before introductions can start.
Someone can survive, and then the credits.
Yes. So Lee was this week's red shirt. Well done.
Lee was this week's Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. Oh,
fuck you, Tuffly.
Sorry.
All right, so we'll do introductions and we'll do them starting now.
We've seen you staggering out of the work week, but now it's time to buck up, little camper. The weekend is here. This is a needcoffee.com podcast, and we're going to help you the rest of the way home. Stand by for Weekend Justice.
Edition of Weekend Justice. It's the Weekend Justice podcast here on needcoffee.com, the number one internet audio train wreck podcast thing. We're here in the Hall of Weekend Justice with the Weekend Justice League, and I will endeavor to introduce them. Going from my right to your left, we have Scott Sears with us. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Hello. We also have Roxas Mazhouse. Hello, Rox.
Good day.
Hello. And we also have Serve is back.
Buenos noches.
Serve, congratulations on like 2 weeks of waking up and finding that your new bride has decided to let you live. Congratulations.
I know, it's pretty awesome. I can't make any guarantees for next week, but we'll see.
You know what, Serve? That is the key to a good marriage, is understanding that there are no guarantees. For 12 years, I have been waking up every morning and going, oh, wow, she didn't kill me when she had the chance. I must have done okay yesterday.
Safety schmafety.
You got it. So welcome back. We also have Tuffly is here. Hi, Tuffly.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm worried now. No.
If you're only worried now, because you've been married a while, dude. It's
weird. Yeah.
And this is Kim we're talking about.
I know. Candy-coated princess of darkness.
Yes.
There you go. We also have John Boutel from the Neat Geek. Hi, John.
Ooh, that looks pretty, John.
You know what, John, can I make a suggestion? I know none of us actually control the soundboard, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own, but every once in a while, if you really want to mess with Lee, throw in the sound of a zipper before that. I'm just saying.
Awesome.
Oh.
I can't get it out.
Which just got on the shit list again. Which just got back on the shit list.
You know, assuming I left it.
Right. A zipper works well on this one too.
You're assuming she listens after the point she leaves.
That's very true. That's
what
why
was it? I didn't hear it. What was it?
I can't get it out.
Ah, there we go.
Nice.
That one's kind of painful though. Here, try it again. Zip.
I can't get it out.
I don't know.
That's
go back to the first
that's
one.
That's what she talks about drinking, so we can say, you know, she's become go
she's
on.
Become,
what's that, Scott?
Let
I
it
can't
out,
talk
Scott.
Anymore. I can't talk anymore.
I can't get it out.
Oh, Scott, that's great. Go on. Would you just give up on yourself before we could even say anything?
I realized it wasn't going to happen, so I just figured I'd take it out of its misery.
That's a good one for the soundboard, too, John.
Yep.
And beginning the podcast in negative points.
How big is the soundboard now?
The soundboard, basically what John has done is he's gone and bought a Cray from a garage sale and he's using that.
Is it the one with the bench?
Yes.
Well, don't you remember, like, the pictures of Krays? They always seem to have, like, a little, like, bench around them.
They did look like 60s Art Deco stuff, didn't they? Some kind of weird kind of thing. Like, you know what?
Yeah, you know, I miss that. Because now we have all just these little boxes and the gray box. And it's like, how boring.
Pictures of Krays, you know what they need with those benches? You're absolutely right. They had the benches. It almost looked like the inside. What you need is a bunch of hookahs that people were, like, puffing off of.
Hey!
And we draw serve him.
Would you put the hookah on the second floor? Oh no, you put the Luca on the second floor.
I smoke upstairs from you.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I've seen you before. Anyway, so you guys wanted to talk about Mad Men.
Yeah, season finale. Woo.
Where no one hung themselves for a terrific second week in a row. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
So,
no one hung themselves for 1 week.
Yeah, 1 week. Last week. Yeah. Well, so, I don't know.
You like to have consecutive weeks of hanging on television, don't you?
Yeah. Just consistent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bert Cooper's next.
He's been next for like 4 years now.
I know. I'm waiting. Yeah. And
every time he picks up his shoes and leaves an office, I think, well, he's going to die. So,
you know what? Here's something. We've never seen his office this season.
I don't think he has one.
He made comment in this episode the finale that he'd like an office this time.
Oh,
he doesn't have one.
Wow. Oh, my God. Oh, see, that would have been a brilliant episode where he just goes around and annoys everybody. It's like, oh, God, here comes Bert. Look busy.
So he doesn't have a place for all his ancient Japanese porn?
No. Or his Ayn Rand books.
It's still at the old Cooper Sterling office.
it looks like Roger's going to turn to a hippie.
Or storage.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate, I think.
Yeah.
So Joan is fully ensconced as a fifth 5%er.
I think Joan's gonna end up owning the joint.
You know, wouldn't that be great?
They officially made her.
Because they did the paperwork.
Yeah.
Before she went to sleep with that guy. They did the paperwork.
Because she seems to be the only one who's actually interested in, like, the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she's the one
everyone else everyone else is, like, checked out.
Yes.
I agree. And,
yes.
She's the only one that's paying attention. But
yeah.
One of the things, because I just watched it tonight. We DVR it, and I watched it tonight. And think back to the scene where they all go upstairs, all the partners. Partners go upstairs and they're just kind of looking around and she spray paints the X on the floor where the stairs are going to be. And then there's a scene of two guys on the left, two guys on the right, Joan in the middle with the big windows in front of them. And they're just kind of backlit. All you see is their backs.
There's your DVD cover, by the way.
Phenomenal shot.
That was a nice cinematic shot. And if you notice, apparently Don is in a window, but his is like off center, like he's boxed in. Somebody actually thought of that. I'd have to relook at that. But
it should be.
Yo shot. What they've done.
Oh, so, and it seems like Peggy is going to develop Virginia Slims.
Yes. Yeah. That looks fantastic.
And that was the bit. Didn't we see that bit coming? Because wasn't that the cigarette that they were going to have the lady that was dating Don last year do the group research project on?
Yeah.
But
they made it more obvious. Like they talked about how the cigarettes are smaller and, you know, going to the factory and everything is like, you know, that is a thing with this season. It seems like things are more obvious this time. You know, you had like what's his face doing the noose and some other things. It just seems like everything's a bit more – you don't have to work as hard to get some of the stuff that's going on.
Right. Everybody was worried that it might do like a reboot at the ending, you know, because it was titled Beauty and the Beast of, you know, either you see, you know, Don finally sees – Megan, who I liked all season long.
As long as she keeps her mouth shut, yes.
Right. Her kind of sad sack kind of, you know, self-esteem. He finally sees that. So
I liked Megan as a character because of her mom.
Speaking of moms, who do you think if we could get anybody from Great Britain, who do we want as Rebecca's mom for next season?
That's interesting.
And you know, the weird, I hope it's somebody that will, you know, start a lawsuit, because, you know, Rebecca's savvy enough to know that, you know, Don was being stingy on giving her $50,000 out of $150,000, which that part she didn't know, but she knew on, you know, due to work and, you know, his expertise, he pretty much contributed more than $50,000. So she knew that he was skimping. So
he's also skimming. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know,
she didn't know that.
She didn't know that.
Outright embezzling.
Embezzling.
Well, I mean, to everyone's knowledge, basically the firm broke even.
Yes.
For what Lane stole.
This is true.
Am I mistaken, or is the only person who really knows the whole story is Don?
Yes.
Even Don doesn't know the full story.
Well, no, but he...
Don doesn't know how deep the hole goes. He thinks it's just the one check.
Yeah, or he's hoping it's just the one check.
Oh, and then there was the whole thing about, you know, the Gilmore girl getting electrocuted.
Yeah, that was kind of a... Well, okay, we were rewarded with another Pete getting punched out. we were rewarded with that twice.
Yeah, got his ass kicked twice in 5 minutes. So that's three fights Campbell has lost.
Yes.
Awesome. And you know, Pete, here's the thing. Pete could have gotten away with it if he had just kept his mouth shut.
Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah.
If he had just not said anything in that last 2 minutes of that.
I know, but it's so weird.
Fine, Pete, let your morals...
No, but that's always been his problem.
I know,
let your morals kick in now.
Yes, that's what I was trying to spit out. It's like, when do your morals kick in? When does that happen? You know, obviously you're not taking care of Peggy's and your kid, but you... for the
and
electroshock treatment, girl.
And when the hell did his hairline, I mean, my God, it's running so it must be him, because it's running away as fast as possible.
It is. Unless they're combing it to make him look more and more like suit type of thing.
You're coming in and out, Rox.
Oh, sorry.
Like you vanished there. What did you say?
Oh, I said I wonder if they're altering it to make him look more older and more worn, you know, to be that type of
man the great final suit.
Executive.
The effect that it's having on Pete.
Yeah.
And you know, it is interesting that it seems like for most of them, it does seem like, you know, with Pete and Don to some extent, is it's like they want something, but none of them really have like the internal language to figure out what it is. You know what I mean? It's like, I think when he was talking to Dow Chemical, you know, talking about how, you know, happiness is the moment before more happiness, and how you keep grabbing for it and grabbing for it and grabbing for it. But the problem is, if you keep doing that, you know, nothing makes you satisfied. So you keep going and going and going, driving yourself nuts, and then ending up, you know, so dissatisfied, you're like with Pete and some of the others, they keep doing more and more risky behavior to try to find that satisfaction that's always fleeting.
Well, so does that mean like Bert Cooper's the only one that's relatively happy out of that whole group? I would say yes.
Yeah, because he's not driving himself
Well, Peggy, you know. She left.
Right. But I mean, before.
I don't know that even Peggy's all that happy or had been all that happy. I mean, they were building that up all season about how she felt, you know, the guys were getting the better jobs. They were getting Jaguar and she was getting relegated to this other stuff. And every good idea that she had, right. Either the customer didn't like it and no one would stand up for or whatever else. So
there was an article I read earlier in the week that there was a woman that was a copywriter.
What?
I think did she's I get saying booted
or yeah.
No, I think there. Rox is the one that's disappeared.
Rox, come back.
Rox is gone. Rox is no longer here.
I think I know what article she's talking about, though. And I think she said that it wasn't as bad.
You're back, Widge, but you know, Rox is gone.
It was different what they're showing on the show.
What?
Said Rox is gone.
What happened to Rox?
She said she couldn't take it anymore. Just hung herself.
Oh. Okay, you've been listening to too much Mad Men talk.
Well, what it was is that someone bought her a Jaguar. Or a Jaguar, as Top Gear people. Jeremy Clarkson will correct me on.
Yeah, she hung herself because she couldn't figure out how to pronounce it.
Or start the car.
What she really wanted was a cigar, actually.
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Sometimes, but not in this case.
And sometimes
anyway.
It's a penis.
Thank you, Scott.
But you were all thinking it.
I appreciate the footnote. Or in this case,
no.
Penis note.
No. Actually, no.
So, okay, I'm sorry, I went away to tinkle. Did you guys finish talking about Mad Men while I was away?
No, Rox was in the middle of a salient point, and then Skype said, no, we will not hear any of it.
No, oh, we will not hear a salient point. This is weekend justice. No, can't have that.
Oh, fine.
So, but I think it's I think it's an interesting place where they left it with Dawn. With Don and Megan.
Yeah, it's like he wants – it's weird. He wants the women – he wants his woman to be – have some like some spine to him, but not too much so that they'll bend when he wants them.
Well, you know, the way I interpreted the end is he let her go. That was the way I kind of interpreted the end. The end was basically – yeah, she's going to go off and have a bit of an acting career, and he's probably going to fool around on her, basically.
Well, I mean, with the character Don Draper, wasn't it really just a matter of time? I mean,
it was.
He's been a good boy for two seasons now, but
what I think he was trying to do, and I think part of the reason he didn't want Megan to go was that he didn't want the temptation.
Didn't trust himself.
He doesn't trust himself, and he still doesn't.
Still makes sense. Yeah,
clearly. But for the greater good, because what also has been the theme this season is that Don keeps helping people, and exactly what he said to Peggy, I keep helping people and they leave.
Oh God, that movie scene. The way I saw it, I mean, is the actress coming back? Do we know?
I don't know.
Because, you know, they had that conversation people have. It's like, oh, yeah, we should get together. And there never are. I'm wondering if that is his way of saying, yeah, she's not going to be back.
Well, there was two things I'm trying to think of. I don't know how many movies Olsen's in over the next year. But it seems that if someone's in a lot, if any of the primary cast is in a bunch of major films, they're not on a whole lot. I.e. Jared Harris the last 2 years, January Jones in the last 2 years, although partly due to pregnancy. But so that was the first thing I'd check. They may have given her an out to go do something. But we suspect that there's only 2 years left in the show anyway. So I don't know what that means.
Do we suspect or do we know? Actually, I thought there's only 1 year left. Last I heard, they only had.
The deal was for, I believe, the deal was for 2 years. So whether or not this season counted as part of that deal or was there 2 years after this, they're being a little funny about it. They're not Weiner's saying there should be a seventh series.
I can tell you this. For DirecTV, this may be their last chance to see Mad Men.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, they love to put that commercial on there.
Wait. I thought it was Dish Network.
It's Dish.
That's what I said, Dish. I don't know what you guys heard.
Which? I'm more surprised to edit that.
I'm actually more surprised when I saw the commercial. And they have a longer version of the commercial where not only are they talking about Mad Men, but they're talking about Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and, like, The Killing. And I'm sitting there going, wait, they renewed The Killing? Wait, they renewed Hell on Wheels? What? There's actually going to be a second season of Hell on Wheels? Really?
What else do they got going?
I have heard that.
But I was very surprised. That was the first time I had heard, oh, yeah, there's going to be a season two of that. Really? Okay.
I have heard that he's going to start writing up the new season, like, in next month.
Well, he's working on a film now, isn't he? He's doing a movie.
Well, he said he was going back to writing it in July. So I think
he's directing a film.
Well, maybe he's not. Maybe he's doing it while he's, you know, while they're waiting to set up the shop. I don't know. But he said in July he's going to start writing the next season, so people won't be waiting quite as long for the next season.
I wonder, but. Well, they're going to have a couple. They're going to have at least one empty slot because this is it for Breaking Bad, right?
I don't know.
I think Breaking Bad is done. Yeah.
So I mean, after the season that's going to start in July, right? So that I know they're going to split it up, but I know that this is it, basically. Correct? People who watch that show.
I don't know.
I have not watched it, although I understand that I'm supposed to.
Okay.
Oh, Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I spaced out there for a minute. I was
And that happens when I talk, apparently.
I was on a meth high. yes, this is definitely the final season that's coming up, and I'm not even sure if it's a full season. Bryan Cranston was talking on somewhere. I forget where I was listening to him talk. He was saying that, yeah, they've already filmed it. They're done. He knows how it ends, blah, blah, blah. But that's it. Everything is over.
All right.
I got to split peeps.
All right.
Oh, okay.
You got to split peeps.
Congratulations again.
You still have peeps left over?
I do. And
you're probably not very good. Oh, wow.
They're
peeps
nice
and nigh.
Rock hard and crunchy.
They soften up if you microwave them.
Really?
Ooh, you can toast them.
But you can't microwave them too long.
No. See, that's the trick.
Yeah.
You have to gauge when to press the stop button.
Got to be very careful. All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Toughly, you have to know when to stop. Press the stop button is basically the tagline for all of Deed Coffee's podcasts.
Yes. You have to know when to press the stop button.
Exactly.
It's also how you get to cheat at pressure lock.
Ooh, yeah.
You know when to press the stop button.
So, Rox, I've heard nothing but great reviews of the first half of your point that you were making before Skype told you to fuck off.
So there was this article. About a copyright.
A copywriter, female copywriter.
Yes, a copywriter. Yes.
Who actually said there were more female copywriters than you thought of that time period. So
there must have been.
There were. I mean, she worked on a ton of stuff. I think it was like a New York Times article. Oh, of which, just real quick, Toughly, just side note. Let Kim know I posted a link of drinks. There's a drink little app type thing on the New York Times about how to make summer drinks.
Okay. So. I've got an app. I got a couple of years ago for my iPod that's got drink mixes, and you can actually picks it by month or themes, or you can just randomize it by shaking it.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, they pointed out some gin drinks in the article, so.
Oh, nice. She can use those, yes.
Yes. She needs to acquire sweet vermouth.
I've been enjoying the summer of gin as well, so.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, I guess we wrapped up.
So, Mad Men, we're done.
I guess so.
Yeah. Till next year. Woo.
So I'll pitch this out to you because I think everybody else answered it already. So you think that was Dawn giving Megan up?
I think so.
Yeah.
At least, I mean, it's runs the same MO as what Betty went through. You know, she was a model. Then, you know, she had potential. And then she stayed home. And somebody pointed out that apparently Dawn hates women in bathrobes.
Yeah.
You know, because there she was, sloppy drunk in a bathrobe, waiting for Dawn to come home. I don't think he liked that. I wouldn't either, you know. Just
yeah, but every time we record Help Me Rocks, you're in a bathrobe.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I am in a bathrobe.
If somebody wanted to talk to you in your bathrobe, what number would they call?
They would call 404-382-0769. And you stream it so you can see me in my terry cloth W Hotel bathrobe.
You can.
Nice. Yes, you can.
It's no joke.
No joke.
It's for reals, people.
Yes. Yes. I acquired that bathrobe from a W Hotel.
With conviction.
With conviction. Yes.
She hasn't been convicted yet.
Well, yeah, it's funny that, you know, this one girl, this gaggle of women I was with, it's like, oh my God, they left the storeroom open. I'm like, oh, grab some stuff. And it's like, oh my God, there are those expensive bathrobes. I'm like, everybody grab one. And this girl's like, isn't this the greatest caper ever? I'm like, I said, this is peanuts, honey.
And
then you took her under your wing and she became your acolyte. And you guys went on a crime spree that lasted 12 years.
Yes, that's right.
That lady later became
until
Maude.
You drop off the side of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. D.B. Cooper has nothing on you.
Absolutely none. Absolutely none.
Reference, Scott. Well played.
So, let me ask you, because I'm not very keen on this. What was the extent of D.B. Cooper's crimes?
Well, number one, he gets confused a lot with D.B. Sweeney.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see how that could happen.
Yeah.
And since then?
Well, since then, oh, go, Rox. You probably trained D.B. Cooper, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy that actually went ahead and stole... What was it? It was back then a lot of money. It was a lot of money, yes. Yeah, it was like a couple $100,000 or something. But he used a plane, okay, for his getaway. Now, unlike just taking the plane and just landing it somewhere, he jumps out of the plane with a parachute into this expanse of out in the West, right? It was like in the Seattle area or something.
I believe.
And the thing is, he disappeared. So he either met up with an accident, you know, falling through, you know, the canopy of trees, or did they actually find remnants?
Well,
did they?
My understanding is from when I was still listening to Coast to Coast before they turned into Let's Talk About the Economy.
They do not.
Oh, they do all the fucking time now. Or at least they did when I finally, I think I mentioned that on the show at the time when I finally canceled my subscription and just stopped fucking listening because it was just so boring. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for making me not watch Mad Men.
You're welcome, I guess. But what I understand is they found some bills. Some money that they were then able to trace back to what they handed to D.B. Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that like in the wilderness area that he parachuted into.
But they never found bones or...
No, they never found... And in fact, there's been about 15,000, of course, different theories. But one of the things that they were talking about on Coast to Coast was they had found a guy who had said that his dad had confessed to him that he was D.B. Cooper. But of course, there's 15,000 theories.
Oh yeah.
So did he actually land it around the Seattle area?
We don't know.
I don't remember where exactly it was, well, but there were a lot of trees.
I'm looking on Wikipedia, which is always right. Somewhere between Portland and Seattle.
Okay.
But you know what he did? We know what he did. He used that money to found Starbucks.
Maybe.
Yes.
But you know what, Scott? It was enough of a mystery that they actually had an episode of, you know, that Leonard Nimoy show.
Of course.
In Search of, yes. Yeah. Which I like. I like that show.
Did he have a beard in the episode, or was this a non-beard episode?
Non-beard episode.
Ah, okay.
Yes. I think it was in the same half hour as the Coral Castle down in Florida.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, he got away with $200,000 in 1970.
Oh, okay. Which was a lot. That was like $1 million back then.
Yep.
Because back then in the 70s, you can actually put your money in a bank and get 10% interest. But that's for coast to coast now.
Yeah, I know.
That's how the economy talk started, which
I know.
So what exactly? What do they talk about the economy? I mean, is it shifted over to being
It's not all.
You know, when the aliens come to invade us, they're going to need to know how the currency system works.
Unless they talk about the Bilderberg Group.
They talk about that,
but partly what it is that just, I swear to fucking God, at least it seemed like anyway, two nights a week, they'd have somebody on to talk about, you know, the housing crisis or the depression or the economy or something where you're just like, you know, even if you put a conspiracy spin on it, it's just like, guys, nobody fucking tunes in for this. We're here for the crazy shit. We're here to escape the fact that the economy sucks.
We want battleships launched into space to use battleship Yamamoto.
Which, when the aliens invade, they're going to need a place to live. And they're probably going to want, you know, decent property values.
Well, you know, and they also don't want a place that's, their homestead on the top of a giant lake of black goo. You know what?
Exactly.
That's what it is. Wait, rocks?
Yes.
You need a Beverly Hillbillies Prometheus crossover.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yes, because it's a bubble of news.
You got it, see?
And Fassbender can play both David and Jethro.
No.
Drysdale.
You know, we could do him as Miss Hathaway.
I was thinking
going on. She was the machinations behind Mr. Drysdale.
Helena Bonham Carter.
I thought Rachel Madden would play Jane Hathaway.
Oh chief.
Rachel Maddow would be a perfect Jane Hathaway.
Yeah.
But what you need is
Overman has to be Drysdale.
Well, no, what you need is what
Ashton Kutcher could be Jethro.
Oh Christ! What I think you do is all the other people besides the Beverly Hillbillies. What you do is you pull a Kinehearts and Coronets, like with Alec Guinness, and Michael Fassbender plays all the other characters.
Oh, I like that. Yes.
Even Ellie May.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
Ooh, they're going to need some serious prosthetics.
No one will
for that.
Know the difference.
Oh my God! Yeah.
They're going to need some serious prosthetics for that.
Oh God. So Rob, you actually did not see Prometheus the second time, right?
No.
You dodged it. Well done.
No, I didn't. I still might at some point, but no.
So there you go.
I did see Moon Knight's Kingdom a second time though.
Wow. I can't wait to see that.
Because Janet wanted to see it, and she hadn't saw it before, so we went and saw it, and I'm convinced that Bob Balaban is really Rox's dad.
No, I can say right now he's not, but, you know.
But Rox, in the inevitable Rox of Spaz House biopic, he would be a great pick to play your dad.
I don't know. I don't know. Actually, later in my dad's years, he started looking like an older Paul Newman, really. Before he died. Ooh. Yeah.
Well, Rox, when you see the movie, you will see why we think that.
I know, but you know, it's not here yet. We don't have that movie yet.
Hey, did you watch Fairy yet?
Yes, I did. And honestly, all right, Rob gave me a film. It's called The Fairy. It's French, so it's La Fée or something like that. Very cute film. I think it was too long.
Yeah, I do too.
It's basically... No, this woman comes into this man's life who he is a night watchman at a small boutique hotel, and she gives him three wishes. So the things he wishes for is a scooter, and I love this, free gas for life. That is a man who's thinking. And there's lots of antics that ensue, because some people think she's crazy, but she gets pregnant just as fast as Liz Shaw on Prometheus. So there is nice.
In a far more plausible way.
In a far more plausible way, yes. I liked it. I think it was just a tad bit too long.
I think it was about 20 minutes too long. But yes. I thought you'd like the way it looked more than anything
else. Yeah, I liked it. It was sort of like a really toned down version of like Amelie in a way. I mean, it was still fun. Yeah. It was very light. You liked all the characters, including the cops. You know, and the poor black guys. I liked it. It seemed like they could have chopped it and not necessarily make it into a full short film, because it just needed 20 minutes hacked off.
It's about an hour 45, and it easily could have been an hour 20, 25.
Yes, yeah.
And then cut out the credit.
Yeah, a really enjoyable film. The neat thing is, like, what I like about French films is they don't mind putting in regular looking people into films, which makes it more believable for the audience. So you can actually get sucked in because, like, yeah, they could be like my neighbors. They look like somebody at the fish store, you know, something like that, that they're more plausible. They're not like, you know.
Yeah. And that guy who's at the lead is like the French Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. Who was the one French comedic actor for the longest of time? He was in the fourth Alien film, and he was in Delicatessen and City of Lost Souls. What is his name?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he reminded me of him, but in an angular way. Yeah. Very angular, but both actors really knew how to do physical stuff with their bodies. Even when they were doing that weird little underwater dance, they knew how to control their bodies, even in, you know, as they're doing these crappy little dances. Really, these are people that had control over what they were doing. And I commend people like that because it's an art form, you know. So I was really impressed with that.
I think Moonrise Kingdom goes into wide release this week, but I could be wrong.
It does. It's hitting Atlanta this Friday. So.
Oh, yay.
It is just like actually charming.
People
and
are
fun.
People are still talking about that.
Yeah.
About what?
It's cute and fun. And yeah. And the kid actors in it are great.
Mm-hmm.
So
Rob, anything else that you've seen recently that we should know about?
Nothing you really need to know about without causing self-embarrassment and sadness. As a favor, I went and saw the new Adam Sandler film because a buddy of mine wanted to see it. It was free.
Oh, wow.
So basically, I got him in. It started. And a record 3 minutes and 30 seconds in, I left.
So what film? What film?
That's my boy.
Adam Sandler. Yeah, otherwise known as the death of Andy Samberg's career.
It was the typeface, wasn't it?
Well, no, I could just say this in it.
Call back.
And Tupper will truly feel the pain of this. Vanilla Ice is very good in it. Wow. I saw like the first 3.5 minutes. I left. I went and saw
some friends of mine in the lobby, hung out with them for a while, went across the street to the comic book store, and then came back into it for like another 15 minutes and then left again. So
Rob, can I ask you, if this is like the other good thing Vanilla Ice ever did it kind of sound like Queen and David Bowie?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's got that show on HGTV.
I'm fine on that. I'm fine with that, but, you know, they'll put
it. Does he still have the hair?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
But the other thing I saw that was really quirky was looking for a friend at the end of the world.
Oh, how was that?
How was it?
Yeah.
I this is going to fall on different points of view with people. I like Steve Carell in his films because most of his film choice, like the one where he has all the people over for dinner and makes fun of him. I fucking love that movie.
Dinner for Schmucks.
Yeah, I liked him.
Yeah, I love it. And even like he makes these movies, and even the ones that aren't box office hits, he's actually really enjoyable. He's a really good sort of film actor for picking these roles. He's kind of got that odd sort of.
Get Smart wasn't terrible.
Was that terrible? No.
I would say Get Smart over Date Night, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. I liked Get
Smart. Date Night wasn't. I didn't hate Date Night, but there could have been worse.
Yeah.
You know. Even his horrible movies, though, are at least enjoyable because he's in them. And whereas Adam Sandler movies are just, it's over, you know.
See, I thought he was going to go the route of, you know, Punch Drunk Love, which was really him stepping out of. Well, that was a really good film. I liked that one.
Yeah.
So, and then he went back to
it. And he missed it. Yeah.
Yes.
But everybody in the movie is really, really in looking for a friend at the end of the world. It was really good. It's sort of a completely new take on the idea of the apocalypse. Yes, the world's ending. Everyone's going crazy. Sort of the anti-melancholia. You know, yes, the world goes crazy. But it's sort of like there's this certain sort of bliss about everyone just doing about their own business, knowing the world's going to end. And it's sort of a different take. I mean, I like it because Steve Carell's in it, but I also like the fact that there's this sort of weird take on end of the world movie, you know? And actually the pairing of those two really actually works much better than I thought it would. So
has anybody seen, the Simon Pegg movie, Fantastic Fear of Everything?
No, has that even come here yet?
I think that was supposed to be. Well, I think it was Unlimited against Prometheus, but I don't know.
Not yet. Hang on, I'll tell you.
I will say this though: the other thing that I did see that I encourage everyone to see because it's making the rounds, in the same way that Frankenstein did. James Corden's Two Governors is showing. They won the Tony for it. Is showing in some theaters through Fathom and like the Landmark things that they do.
Yeah.
This is what's awesome. The National Theater has a deal with like a couple different theater chains where you can see their entire season in a movie theater, right? And so what they've done is they've got their whole season. They did Frankenstein last year. They did a really great Bulgakov play, and this year they've got the Corden thing. But they also are doing the, I believe it's the Antigone with Christopher Eccleston's coming over here as well, which is just going to be fucking incredible. And this is the part where I get mad because I actually paid for tickets, but Witch will be excited because he didn't. One of the things that's sort of making these theater rounds after the end run is going to be the Glengarry Glen Ross in New York. They're going to have that. Yeah, that's going to start making – because this is a whole new – they were talking about this at one of the screenings. A couple of guys from the trade show people that do the show that put the screeners on, they're like, the new thing now – because movies are taking such a fucking hit on the box office, is to put plays that people, like high-profile plays that people won't get to see. Like if someone in Butte, Montana will never get to see, you know.
That's because Aaron even said it. Mignon or whatever, I forgot what opera it was.
What, the filet?
No. It was one of the Metropolitan major operas was streamlining in Ireland, actually this one weekend, and it outsold some sort of film that Aaron thought wouldn't, you know, he's like, yeah, some opera outdid, you know, the box office here for some certain film. So yeah. The Met has actually ramped up the amount of operas they're going to be putting into the theaters because it's worked. And you know, you've got sold out places like up in Ithaca and stuff that you have to get tickets early for a Met live broadcast. And that's going all over the place. So yeah, I can see where they're jumping on that.
And because the funding to PBS is gone, like the Met's like, well, we can put this on PBS or we can put it in the theater. Where do we make more money?
Right.
So, well, you know, the interesting thing is that the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who may go that route.
Mm.
Some sort of Fathom event where the night of the anniversary of Doctor Who, they're going to show Unearthly Child in a theater.
Mm.
But I mean, One Man, Two Governors, though, is making the rounds in theaters, and it's fucking incredible. I mean, he completely deserves the Tony for that. And I love it because I like to go to theater, but I can never afford tickets. And there's only so many ways you can try to get them before you go broke. I mean, a week in New York buying theater tickets and you're done, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, let me just say, Rob, that Rob, if somebody in Butte, Montana gets to see Frankenstein, whereas I couldn't because they couldn't, I even contacted the National Theater and I told them, you guys do understand that the cinemas you have this in, you're in the Atlanta area, but you don't have a single one in Atlanta. And that basically the closest one to where I am is an hour away, one direction in traffic.
Yeah.
So and it's a 2-night thing. So it's like, you know, you're having to, I'm basically two complete nights of my week cratered.
Yeah. And part of it is it got put into theaters. It did really well. Sherlock took off. So now the DVD rights are out.
Good. So DVD, yes.
It's going to come out on DVD at some point. It may even end up on PBS, like where they do 1 week they do one and 1 week they do the other. So especially since the Johnny Lee Miller series is coming up where he's Sherlock now.
Yeah.
Elementary.
Oh, God.
Because of that, you might see more and more of that type of thing. It might be like, because apparently, and I missed this, apparently the David Tennant, Patrick Stewart, Hamlet, they did that for some theaters and you could go see it.
Wow.
The David Warner just did something and that screening and I missed that. But like literally, when we go to New York in July, I think we're like crazy on. I'm going to spend more money on theater than records, which is just fucking weird.
Well, didn't they do that with King Lear too? Wasn't McCoy talking about that?
Yeah, McCoy was talking about that too, and like his production of the Mikado that he did in Bath.
Yeah.
If they would have been able to, now again, that theater in Bath is a pretty high profile theater. But they don't have the resources to do widespread screens of that. But there would have been an audience to see Sylvester McCoy in the Mikado in the U.S. People would have paid to see it.
Oh my God! Know? Yeah.
So, I'm trying to get one, and it'll happen eventually. But
yeah, well, I will say, Rob, I will say that David Tennant, Patrick Stewart, Hamlet is on Blu-ray.
DVD.
Yeah, it's on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah. And
I have it.
Yeah, I have it too. And I would say, and Tuffley, you may have heard it, but that is a fantastic commentary on that. So just as a side recommendation, if that interests anyone, which it should, the commentary is fantastic.
Yeah, and what I did really like about it is when PBS first showed that, they didn't ramp up the fact that it was Patrick Stewart and David Tennant. They ramped up the fact that it was Shakespeare and sort of explained in the intro what the story was.
Oh, our local PBS had a fucking field day with that.
Well, when people did
that it was Stewart and Tennant. Yeah,
the fact that there are people that would see that don't know anything about Shakespeare. So they didn't assume that everyone going in knew what it was going in. So they took the time to sort of carefully build up to it so people could see it and not be completely caught off guard, which I did like. But I mean, my God, I think I'm completely fine if they show theaters in either New York or London And after it runs, I mean, I'm fine with it. When it runs, they make all the bank in the world they want and don't show it anywhere. But after it leaves the stage, if you show that on a movie screen theater or a movie house before, I mean, I would probably buy the DVD, but I would go see it in the theater, even if I know the play ended like 2 months ago. Like, apparently they fucking did that with the James Earl Jones thing that I wanted to see, which just...
What, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fuck!
You know, so there's always, and the thing is, in England, it's a huge deal to do this, and everyone goes. The Met stole the idea from showing the Met from the different opera houses in New York. Like, apparently, L'Estrade and some of those places in Europe have been doing this for, like, decades, almost, where they just show an opera and people go see it. But, I mean, it's a huge market that hasn't been tapped into yet, and I think eventually you're going to get sort of pay-per-view theater. You know, where they'll have one show or the week of previews, you'll be able to do like a pay-per-view and like buy in and watch it like you would watch a concert on YouTube.
Oh, I'd do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be on. But in fact, I think here's the crazy thing, Rob.
Well, remember when Kim was talking about the Phantom going to see Phantom 2?
Oh, yeah. Love Never Cares. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the DVD release was like the next week, so they put it in theaters to promote the DVD release.
Yeah. Now, the problem with this, though, is that Fathom are not necessarily the people I would want to do business with, because they will completely do anything for a buck. With a national theater.
Andrew Lloyd Webber be crass and commercial?
No, there's nothing to do. It has nothing to do with Andrew Lloyd Webber. The fact is that Fathom builds him up as he's big. Even the Kevin Smith thing would have been much more of a success if he wasn't going through Fathom, because they overpriced their tickets. And again, they market the wrong way. So instead of putting a film in a really nice old movie house where people want to see it, they put one in like a strip mall, the strip mall theater that no one goes to that hasn't been upgraded yet. That's what, like, finally, for the first 3 months, Rocks, when they were showing operas, it wasn't in the main movie houses here. It was in, like, wherever the AMC $2 theater was still.
Right.
So it was like going to, you know, the theater from 78 that they hadn't fixed. Or the theater from the 80s. So once it started doing well, it got out of those kind of theaters and into other ones, which really actually helped it.
See, ours, they actually put them in the big, the Mongo theater for my area.
Yeah, they tend to do that with the Fathom events too.
Now they do, but it was, you know, kind of crappy. So,
because
it's cool because I can go see a season on the Met without having to pay for going to the Met.
That's and you can watch on how bad their productions are.
if it sucks, you don't feel ripped off.
Right. So, yes.
That's a selling point.
Yes.
In a perfect world, and I'm almost tempted to write the suggestion letter just to get the rejection letter to put in the zine. In a perfect world, to set up our fan team, they should let us run the Met for like a season. To wrap up to the release of the zine.
Oh, wow. All the people I'd like to have fired. Yeah.
You know.
That Peter Sellers guy, that Peter Sellers guy's got to go.
Fire is code for, you know, shank.
Yes. And Julie Taymor ruined several operas before she ruined whatever. Is that even running, that Spider-Man? Is it even doing anything?
It's still going.
I might go see that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So in a perfect world, Rocks, you get to stab her.
All right.
With a sharp object and watch her go, ow.
I don't know. That Peter Sellers guy is first on the list, I think. Then her.
And you know what?
She doesn't annoy me as much as her. She really annoys me.
Rocks, I think that probably Burt Kwok is the guy who's going to try to take out Peter Sellers before you can.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Although I will say that Julie Taymor, I really enjoyed Lion King, but then I really didn't enjoy Titus. And then
I
didn't even see Across the Universe because it made my eyes bleed. And then I heard Eddie Izzard covering Mr. Kite, which made me want to punch kittens. And then you know, it just got worse from there. So.
Yeah. So rocks.
Yes.
If we did that, we would put Danny Aiello and Roger Ebert and Rex Reed out on the street to like sell them on the street with little aprons.
Yes. I like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Haven't figured out what our big scary stunt's going to be for the Zine yet. They'll have to think of something, Rob. I mean, it's not like we can get anybody to jump over a shark tank
zip
or anything.
Lining between the hotels.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think you could try that at the aquarium night, but I don't think they're going to let you do that.
No, I think we got some foot track thing going on at that time, though.
I think you could maybe jump over the world of Coke, but I'm not sure if that's something you'd want to do.
Yeah,
jump over a world of Coke.
So
if it's Diet Coke, I'll do it.
What? So wait a minute. So Scott, let me just make sure I understand this. So the ticket to getting you to do something death-defying and weird is to offer you Diet Coke.
If it's a river of Diet Coke, sure.
Wow, really?
Diet Coke.
Scott, you come.
River
so cheap.
Of Diet Coke, which implies a large amount of Diet Coke.
Oh. Roxy, you say that like you're surprised.
This could be a game for the Fun Fest where we give Scott a really cold can of Diet Coke and people in the audience have to think of crazy shit for him to do.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Rob, that could go very, very wrong in a hurry.
Especially if it involves Mentos, because Mentos and Diet Coke.
Yes.
Not a good idea.
If anyone put the men in Mentos, it was Scott.
I know, but that's sort of a Frolicon thing. So if you want to send Scott to Frolicon, you can call Help Me Rocks, and we'll figure out a way. So just call 404-382-0769.
Willing to pay to
figure out a way we can send Scott to Frolicon.
So that's, Rob, it would be like
putting a Fathom Theater as Frolicon.
Oh, Jesus. Rob, I think it's a commercial that says Scottsy and Mentos. The stale maker.
Yeah. Scott C. One Night Only.
Full of gas.
The musical.
Oh, God.
Well, it's not Frolicon, but Riff Tracks are doing Manos.
Here's a question. Since everything is going towards, you know, they're making a musical out of anything, Rob, what is your projection of in the near future that they'll come out with a Doctor Who musical?
Funny you should ask.
Oh,
well, didn't we already do one?
There have actually already been several. Much like in Britain, they'll have small theater. Like, there's companies that'll take. Like, there was a company that did Evil of the Daleks, for example, and did it as a stage play. And they'll do like Robots of Death. Actually, this guy in is it Wales? I wrote about this in the column. I can't remember what it was either. I think it was in Wales or Ireland. They did a production of Robots of Death. And then they did a theater version of an audio sequel to Robots of Death that came out with it. Paul Darrow was in the audio, and Paul Darrow was in the musical for one night. But there have been times, there was at least one group that did, for some convention in London, a Pandora, the Pandora opens as a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody has done, I believe, The Five Doctors, and I think it was either Wang Chiang or Pyramids of Mars is a musical, and I haven't seen it, but I know that when David Tennant saw it, that it was hilarious. Somebody did Boink as a musical,
right? But I was just wondering, when we'll see one
like
that you'll see open up at the West End.
I don't think it's going to actually happen for quite a while, mainly because the BBC is so guarded about Doctor Who as a property. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the hell they're going through trying to do a film.
Yeah.
Plus, anytime they try to take Doctor Who outside of, you know, TV, the BBC now, not like Big Finish or any of those people, but anytime the BBC has tried to take Doctor Who outside of TV, it hasn't worked well. You know, the Cushing movies, while they're great, weren't the hugest things in the world to do. Plus, if they do a Doctor Who musical, for example, and they want to use Daleks, it's a whole other royalty issue they have to mess with. So
yeah, don't they have that with a lot of the stuff in Doctor Who, like some of the older stuff?
Well, yeah. The Terrence Dick stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like most of the time, and again, a lot of the new aliens that came out in the RTD era were originally going to be other aliens, so you could sort of tell that what aliens they were supposed to be, you know, kind of like. Like the space rhinoceros, you can kind of tell that was supposed to be a Zontaran, you know, before they got the rights. But, you know, I think there's a lot of that, but most of the people that have the rights to it are like, I made a creature for Doctor Who in the 60s. It's going to be on again. I think I'm going to get paid, you know, and most of the time, most of those people are just happy that their work is remembered and they just want to get paid equal value and it's fine. And they do a deal on the DVDs or something, you know. I think that's a lot of the reason, too, why by weird coincidence, like, for example, the Ice Warriors DVD is coming out with Patrick Troughton this year in the second half, just around the same time as the second half of the season is coming with the Ice Warriors in it that are rumored to be in it. So you can see where, okay, we'll use your thing in the season, but we'll give you the DVD money. I mean, there's a lot of that sort of – the DVD releases are not done completely without other things in mind. Sometimes, you know, they happened to make the Davros box set back when they brought back Davros. You know, they happened to do a big master box set when John Sim came in as the master. So they think a lot like that. But
Ace box set coming up soon?
Yeah, the Ace box set is Dragonfire and Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
So could that mean Ace is coming?
Not always.
And then that's it for McCoy. Then they're done with McCoy.
Okay.
Yeah, because
I'm sorry. It's Happiness Patrol and Dragonfire, and the Greatest Show in the Galaxy is coming out later.
Well, wait a minute. She wasn't in Happiness Patrol. Mel was the companion.
Exactly.
Happiness Patrol, she was in that. You're thinking of Paradise Towers.
Well, no, she's in Dragonfire is the first story she's introduced in.
Right, and then Happiness Patrol, where they go after Thatcher.
She is in Greatest Show in the Galaxy, but that's not part of the Ace box set. The Ace box set is just those two, which is Happiness Patrol, which is ludicrously stupid. But it's a really it's stupid when you watch it, but then you put it in the context of Thatcher in Thatcher's England. Don't get excited, Scott. It's a very, very non-veiled social commentary. And Dragonfire is just fucking terrible. This shit that happens in Dragonfire that makes Prometheus look like, you know, it has a plot. So, I asked Sylvester last year, okay, there's this part of Dragonfire where you, like, magically hang out an umbrella off an iceberg, but before that, they never explained how you got on the ledge. What happened? He goes, I don't know, I just stood on the ledge. Nobody told me.
On YouTube, they have a channel for like where they do little previews of like the special features of the, and they actually talk about how initially they were going to have that scene, but then they didn't have enough time, but they left it in because they wanted the visual joke of a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that one had problems.
I know.
Like Mel going off with what's his face.
Glitz. Actually, they don't. They do not hide the fact that Ace and Glitz had sex. That's one of the things they do not hide. If you listen to the dialogue in it, it's very, very well covered. But yeah, sorry.
No,
well, there
right.
you go.
And there you have it.
I feel better.
No, you don't.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, sure I do.
But
no,
without selling anything to Witch, I think this season's going to be really fucking good.
That would be nice.
They need to rebound. You know, I just realized when we do our panels, we do actually get to discuss the second half of the season again.
We'll have seen two of them.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in that way that we could sometimes see them.
Yes. Well, yes.
And maybe more. So, but, yeah.
In that
we'll have something
mysterious,
to talk about
legally acquired way we do.
Smash.
Scott.
Yes.
Be quiet.
We go to Fathom events. That's what happens. They show them a Fathom event.
Yeah, probably the saddest thing is that Terry Pratchett's script isn't going to happen. That's the saddest thing.
Oh, really?
But we got Barrowman, so Scott will be in heaven.
I'm reserving excitement.
What, a room? You're reserving a room?
No. I'm somehow,
it's not just holding back,
how,
Scott.
Well, if you're not reserving a room. If you're not reserving a room, where are you going to stay?
In Barrowman's room.
I have actually put in a request to John Barrowman's people that my friend Lee would really like to have a really nice kiss on the cheek from John Barrowman.
Yes.
Nice.
And afterwards, can you say that line?
And if that occurs, one of us really needs to get a picture of that.
Wait, Scott, what line? That would you like a little box? What?
No. It's like one of these really. Actually, it's kind of appropriate with.
Go on and talk in your mouthful.
No. There's this really bad sci-fi.
You're not ruining
this. I can't get it out.
Oh, we forgot the zipper noise.
That looks pretty, John.
John's gonna have that later.
Hold on, this does work for John Barrowman.
Ooh, that looks pretty, John.
Nice. All right, so Rox, you'd mentioned it before. This thing that I sent you guys, the gaming staff of Need Coffee, about this guy who has been playing Civ 2. Yeah, he's had a version of Sid Meier's Civilization 2 going for 10 years. He's in like the 40th century of the game, and the world has basically just gone to hell.
Yes, there's three superpowers: the Vikings, the Celts, that's who he is, and the Americans. Yes, and it's how do you keep? How much do you have to put in? I mean, how many hours was he putting in to be 10 years? I mean,
this goes to my question, and I asked Kim this when she was talking about it, was, okay, so I know what triggers the end game in, 3, 4, and 5, which is basically you go into space and you start the exploration mission. That triggers the winner.
Well, there's multiple ways to win, basically. Yes.
But that's basically one of the main triggers of the end game. So if I'm guessing this right, he just hasn't been able to activate the trigger that starts the end game. Is that
no? Remember, you can. Oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, I say after you hit one of the quote unquote victory conditions, it does give you the option to continue playing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably what he did. He just continued playing.
Wow.
But I thought, wasn't the posting on the board trying to seek a solution to get out of that?
Yeah, because there's like a military stalemate is what he's got.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the other thing
he's going to be uploading the save file for people to play with.
He probably has become emotionally attached to it and can't.
Nice.
From what I've read, it's more like he wants to find a way out of the stalemate, and he can't do it.
Yeah, it's like he says that he can't build a granary. But he can build another tank.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have
the resources, yeah.
Right.
And tell this guy that Bruce Boxleitner is coming to Dragon Con, and maybe he can ask Tron to take care of it for him.
Nice. Nice. No, I mean, the thing to bear in mind is, if you think about it, I think it's only the victory condition normally hits point wise, even if you don't do any of the go into space
that's what she was telling me.
That hits at year 2050. I know this because Civilization is like my one game that I allow myself, right? I play it for like a week and then I put it away. Because otherwise it will consume my life because that's just the way I am. I am the most frustrated gamer you've ever met in your fucking life. So bearing in mind that you've got it's one turn per year after. It's been that way for a while, but from 2050 he was in the year 3994 or something like that.
Yes.
You're basically, he's done over the course of 10 years, 1,989 44 turns, I think.
Wow.
So, but
wow. No, wait a minute. 1,000? No, he's done. Well, wait a minute.
Yes, what? 3,991
is that? Yeah,
it's almost 2,000.
Yeah,
almost. Yeah.
Wow.
But not quite. But anyway,
really
the point being is that I don't know about with Civilization 2, because I think I came on board with 3, but I know that when you get into, especially when you've got all the graphics and you've got a huge world and a bunch of units, you can just let your machine just crank for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I it would be that kind of thing where you might play like 2 turns a day and then put it away. But yeah, as far as hours, there's no telling how many, you know, CPU cycles he's put into this thing. I just find it amazing. Now, I also find it funny that if he's playing the Celts, here's the thing that so many places that have posted this are like, well, it's the year 3991 and the Americans are still around, but the world's gone to hell. It's like, okay, unless he, and I haven't read the full article, but unless he specifically put the Americans in the game in the setup, he probably did a randomized civilization pick, which means the fact that the Americans are still in means fucking nothing. It could be like in Civilization, at least in Civ 5, you can even add Boudica, you know, as a civilization. So it doesn't fucking mean anything.
You can have Denmark.
I think what he was saying was, and if I've read this correctly, that the Americans and the Celts are democracies. And he had to make his country a dictatorship because
No. He's playing the Celts, and the two other ones are like theological dictatorships.
Yeah.
And he had to shift to becoming a communist because he wanted to stay a democracy. But the problem was he was trying to declare war first, but being a democracy he couldn't. And so his enemies were able to smack him. So he had to shift to being a communist. And the other thing is that I think he also said that in Civ 2, which has changed, I forget in which iteration it changed, you had SDI, so you couldn't launch ICBMs. They basically would knock them out of the sky, but you could in Civ 2, and I think this was still in Civ 3, you could send spies to another city, have them plant a bomb, and have it go off. So basically, they're just nuking the shit out of each other, front, right, center.
Yeah, it's all like irradiated swamps.
Yeah, because
he can't clean anything. He's too busy building roads to keep the armies going.
That's brilliant. I think it's amazing.
Yes, but we don't see that his wife left him, and he's now living at his parents' house in their cellar.
No, I really wish Aaron was here. Because this is almost like the same when they had that episode with Al Qaeda and the IRA.
Huh?
Huh?
What?
Oh, you're talking about.
So what you're saying is Al Qaeda and the IRA are still playing Civ 2 as well?
Never mind.
Are you thinking the verse, the warrior thing?
Scott,
the IRA, what?
Scott, it's not nice to refer to Ireland as an irradiated swamp. Okay, it's not nice.
Yeah, it's just a regular swamp.
No, that's Canada.
Canada's not a swamp. It's too cold to be a swamp.
It's a frozen swamp.
It's a frozen swamp.
Yeah. Well, part of it is. Most of it's not. So, Rox?
Yes.
If someone were spending 10 years in a sim game and they wanted to figure out how to get out, who could they possibly call?
Oh my gosh, you can call Help Me Rocks if you want to know cheat codes and everything else like that. 404-382-0769. I'll tell you how to break the addiction so you can go outside and do something else, like find a girlfriend.
Wait, you go outside?
Whatever,
that
Scott. Sometimes. Yes.
Yes, find out if the Contra code works on Civ 2.
There you go, yes.
Yes, I think
square, up, down, circle, triangle.
I think, Rox, the cheat code that you're looking for is ID go outside.
Do they still have Coachella in that universe? And if so, is it possible that Axl Rose is still not playing in Guns N' Roses in that universe?
Oh my God! Okay, now that you've brought up Guns N' Roses.
Oh God!
Of course.
No! That
Oh, yeah. Well, now that you've played
Guns
N' Roses. Call Help Me Rocks.
No, I want to ask, what is the marketing ploy for that Rock of Ages? At first we saw the things. This is a comedy, and then all of a sudden it's like this is fame.
No, no.
And then
Rock of Ages was started as a musical to kind of celebrate, like, I guess, modern rock kind of stuff, right? And
hair metal,
yeah, otherwise called Tuffly music. So
so if you got your tickets yet, Tuffly?
Tough Tunes. Yeah.
No. Hey, you take that back.
Which one of us?
Which one?
Which one of us?
Scott, we haven't seen any 80s photos of you, you know.
Because, wait a minute, wait for it, Rob.
Well, wait, cause Scott already has the mullet, so it's all right.
Whoa.
Not have the mullet.
What? No, you know, Scott was a huge White Line fan.
Fuck you.
All right, so Rob, all right, Rob, explain the Rock of Ages thing, because I'm confused.
Okay, what it is, and Tuffly can help me out here because he's also knowledgeable of such things. The reality of it is, Tom Cruise needs something else besides Mission Impossible to sort of boost his career and have a different multifaceted to it.
Right.
And he thought that this might be an interesting career move to give him different types of roles.
Well, he could have done with it with Magnolia, but go ahead.
Well, it's fucking horrible, right? Yeah. But he's looking at the model of John Travolta did Grease. Oh, this will do for me what John Travolta did for Grease. Or Grease did for John Travolta. Now, having said that, when you see Rock of Angels as a musical, which when I was in London, there was something I wanted to see and I couldn't get tickets, but they gave me free tickets to this. So we had to go see this in the Queen musical, right? When you see it, it is like regular theater form. It's really not that bad. It's actually kind of cool. You have to understand that it's kind of like Mamma Mia in that the plot is very thin and it's just an excuse to play a lot of the songs and have fun.
Oh.
Right?
I know,
to make it heavier and bulkier than it really is.
Right. It's just the trailers, they had Paul Giamatti, the whole signing her tit type of thing. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, it's fame. What? I just didn't understand where they were going.
They can't make Spinal Tap the musical, so this is what you get.
Okay. Well, right. I will say this. I will say that considering how much I enjoy Tom Cruise when he's playing non-Tom Cruise roles, He looks like the best part of that movie to me.
Yeah.
Because I think he's just he is there to have fun. It's like Tropic Thunder. Where you just go,
that's what I was gonna say.
I hope that is what it is, but it's gonna be really hard for me to watch it just because it's like, but I mean, again, people always when Tom Cruise first broke, they associated him with this whole rock and roll ethos because of Risky Business, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of an attempt to get lightning in a bottle like that. Having said that, the whole thing just looks like it could be really frightening. I will probably go see it to be fair, you know. I'm kind of with Widge on the, if you see Tom Cruise in roles where he's not Tom Cruise, it's great. He's great in some of them. The other thing is now when I see Tom Cruise, I have to think of John Barrowman because obviously John Barrowman went to the Tom Cruise school of facial expressions and weird eye looks. So it's kind of like, it's a double whammy for me because I'm thinking of both of them, which is,
ooh,
you know,
that looks pretty,
weird.
John.
Nice. All right. Well, now that we've had that explained, and I think we all feel better about ourselves.
There's a lot of theater tonight, and we got our obligatory Torchwood reference in.
Yeah, indeed. So,
commercials I've seen a bit, I haven't really seen Tom Cruise at all.
No, they're in Scott. You have to look at the early first trailers where they actually show a lot of him in that.
Not with the TV.
In the trailers and not as many later worries me.
Yeah, that is the thing that confused me out of all.
To be fair, it could be along the lines of what Luke said. They really want to surprise people.
Well, and part of it is the first trailer that I saw. That I think was the first trailer, they saved him to the end of the trailer. And it was basically they did the signing the boob thing, and then you saw him on stage basically going, ah! And that was the end of the trailer. So
right.
I think they know, at least here's what I would like to think that I think they know. I think they know that the Tom Cruise thing is probably, like you said, lightning in a bottle. That's going to be the thing. So rather than have a bunch of it in the trailer, they're saving it. Because I, you know, as much as I like Russell Brand, as much as I like Alec Baldwin, as much as I never thought I would see them together on screen, that's not a draw for anyone. Sorry. Especially when you know that they're going to be singing karaoke. That I don't want. Sorry. Sorry. No. Love you both. But anyway. So that,
I love the
that
fact
all...
that John keeps trying to sneak a white lion in during this.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's John because he's a sadist. But in order to get away from that, or at least to attempt to futilely, let us now move to the realm of recommendations so that we can...
Rock Lobster, the musical.
Oh, what?
Rock Lobster!
It's an extended remix.
Yes. So, Scott, I just want to warn you now. It's no fault of your own, but I have a dream.
I have a dream.
It wasn't a fault of his own that you had a dream?
Before I die, I want to see Scott and John Barrowman doing the Rock Lobster at the same time. Like Scott could sing it, and John Barrowman could do like the other guys, like the weird Keith Pearson dance. That is what I want to see.
Hold on 1 second, Rob. Hold on 1 second, Rob. Rock Lobster.
Now, wait a minute, John.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
I don't think that was an actual invocation because at that point, I think Rob was referencing the sexual position.
I just have a visual
of like Scott just walking around a grocery store and he's on the phone and then he tells the person at the counter, oh no, hang on, wait a minute. Rock Lobster.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, he does do that, but he does it to pedestrians walking down the street.
What?
Rock Lobster.
What? Oh.
I could tell. My cue had gone. Yeah, I could tell.
No, that wasn't invoking it either.
Yeah. All right, so.
We already know he's singing it at the Danger Woman Cabaret with her. We already know that's happening.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so. That's going to happen.
That, sure. You know what, Rob? That's going to be on Fathom Events too, isn't it?
No.
Or I can. I actually,
that will be what Riff Trax does after Manos.
I thought it was going to be I Can't Fathom Events.
I can't believe it's not Fathom.
You brought him. All right, so
After Manos like After Mash?
No.
Yes.
Is that where you have
Jamie Farr?
Well, he's working in a hospital, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so recommendations. Who wants to go first?
I do.
Go, Scott.
Okay, coming out soon will be the next book in Charles Strauss's Laundry series. Essentially, it's a very weird mix of, like, imagine if, like, Yes, Prime Minister, H.P. Lovecraft, and John Le Carré had a baby, and he pretty much got the laundry.
Series. I was like, wait a minute.
Laundry series. Sorry.
Okay. All right. I was just going from that into like, well, did you mean so they had a detergent?
But it's Mountain Fresh.
Wait, Rox. It's the color out of Space Catcher.
Oh yeah.
How clean are your clothes?
It catches the socks, you know.
It's yeah. The mountains out of Madness Fresh.
Nice.
Okay. The laundry is the code name for the British version, the British secret agency that deals with evil things from beyond time and space, which unfortunately is made a lot easier to summon with computers being invented. So they have to be really on the ball about stuff. But of course, like any government agency, they're underfunded, have way too much bureaucracy and red tape. So,
oh, it's the early form of Torchwood.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So the next one coming out is called the Apocalypse Codex. I've read the previous three, the Atrocity Archive, Jennifer Morgue, and oh God, what's the third one?
iOS 6.
the Fuller Memorandum. And they're really good. They have a really interesting take on the Lovecraft mythos and computer technology. And it's really good stuff. I mean, there's certainly humor in there, but there's definitely a lot of, you certainly get the sense of dread and evil. And that's from the bureaucracy alone.
What is this series called?
It's called The Laundry Series.
Laundry.
By Charles Strauss.
Okay.
And that's, dear listeners, that's laundry, not lingerie. So.
Yeah, you have to, I forgot it's me, so you have to clarify.
That's Victoria's
Strauss?
Other secret.
Okay, yeah.
Strauss.
Oh, okay. That's Strauss. Okay.
Well, I'm assuming that's how you say his name.
Probably not that Strauss, because I think that Strauss has probably been dead for a while. But a Strauss, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. And I'd like to point out, also, Scott, let me just throw this in here. I'd like to point out for our listeners, these are books that Scott appears to have actually read, so they must be fucking amazing. I'm just saying.
Yes, I have not actually read the Apocalypse Codex because it doesn't come out until late into July. But from the
excuses.
From the previous books, I'm extrapolating this. So this will also be good. I have at least a few data points, so I can. I think I have a reasonable assumption.
Okay. I'm sorry, Rob. What's up?
You know that what was it called? That book by Harkness, the Darkness of Witches or whatever, that came out.
No.
No.
Oh shit! The Discovery of Witches.
No.
No.
All right. Okay, never mind. Answer my question. Because there's a sequel to it coming out, and I have an arc that I don't want. So if anybody like had read it, I was going to send it to them.
Well, who is it by?
Shit, hold on. I'm trying to remember now. I think her name is Harkness. Is it Joanna? No, it's...
Agatha Harkness, who was the nanny for the Fantastic Four?
No, it's by Deborah Harkness. It's called Discovery of Witches.
Oh, yeah, people are reading that now. No.
Yeah.
People.
God, they just hear the contempt dripping on each and every word and letter.
The great unwashed are reading it.
Never mind.
I don't know. That's like that 50 Shades of Grey, people.
Oh.
Or as Scott calls it, I've been waiting for weeks to use this 50 Shades of Gay.
Oh. Boo. Too obvious. It's too obvious.
Anyway, Scott, proceed, please.
Second book is called...
That was a Prometheus what the hell was that moment.
The second book is called The Irrationals, a story of the numbers you can't count on. This is what is really interesting, it's about math, but don't be scared, because what it does is it takes a look at all those weird numbers like pi and like the square root of 2 that don't seem to have like an end to them, and how mathematicians have tried to like quantify these really weird numbers and how they've tried to sort of the history behind these numbers that just don't want to fit in any particular category.
Yeah, and, because you still can't use them in everyday use.
Well, exactly. I mean, pi goes on forever, but it's like, how can a number do that? And weird stuff like the square root of a negative number. You can't do that, but it's still there. So how do you handle it?
Why don't you just round up?
No.
Does that come in an audio format?
I do not see one. I do not see one, but that may change. So, you might want to check that out as well, to educate you. You can talk knowledgeably That was not a word. About the square root of two. That's how weird awesome. It is. About the weird numbers. So there it is. Those are my two books. Done. Dong.
What happened there?
No.
That's a.
Hey, that was mine.
Well, let's see. What happens when I play yours? Nope, same thing happens.
So, oh, my God. We've lost Scott's dong.
Man.
What?
He can't use mine.
What the fuck? John?
Okay. John, you know that Scott and Rock should not share a dong. I'm just saying.
No, I want the dog
really
myself.
Do need 27 inches. That's right. Just don't get the squirty kind.
Oh, squirty. All right.
Sean, fix it.
So fix anyway, it he's in the middle of everything. I'm sure it will be. There
Thank
you go.
You. Yes.
All right, so who's next?
Somebody's going to have to follow that. It might as well be me.
You're a good man, Tuffley.
Throw yourself heroically on that grenade.
I know.
That's what Kim says.
Whoa!
Wow.
Hello.
So Hot Chip have a new record. It's called In Our Heads, which is quite good.
Now, have you heard Two Bears yet, too?
No, I have not.
The guy from Hot Chip, the same time on DFA, has an album, a project called Two Bears.
Yeah,
sorry,
I know.
Go ahead.
No,
sorry,
I know,
ahead.
And I haven't heard that yet. So, yeah. The other thing I was going to recommend this week that was also out is, and this is probably for John, surprisingly, there is a new Rush record.
No way, really?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a new Rush record out.
When was her last album?
Pretty much a live albums. So,
but new stuff.
Yes, this is an actual new studio album from Rush.
Wow. I like Rush.
Nice.
It's called Clockwork Angels. So it is a Rush concept record.
Ooh. Steampunk,
maybe? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So it's a new quote unquote concept record, even though they said they weren't going to do any more of those. So
I do like concept records.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Clockwork Angels from Rush. And I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm going to be on next week, so I'll go ahead and throw it out. The new Fiona Apple drops next week. I've heard most of it. And it's, I think it's going to be quite good. So, and it's an album with a long title. So there you go. Not quite 90 words, but it's a long title. I don't have the full title. Because nobody's actually spelling out the full titles. Rob, do you know the full title?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. I got it.
Okay. Got it. All
the
right.
Full title. The full title is The Idler Wheel is Wiser Than the Driver of the Screw, and Whipping Cords Will Serve You More Than Ropes Will Ever Do. Which sounds like Scott should be interested.
Okay.
50 Shades of Fiona.
Screw, whipping cords, ropes. Hello. Oh, yeah. Don't even pretend. Don't even pretend.
Don't play into his hands, Scott.
All right. Go, Tuffley. Go. Proceed.
Finally, I'm going to suggest, and I normally don't do crossovers and I don't do Marvel and all of that, but this is a tiny self-contained little crossover, so I'm cheating. Journey into Mystery, which I have recommended before, has doing a kind of a 2-month sort of crossover with the current New Mutants title. And the story's called Exiled, so it involves 13-year-old Loki and Thor and Asgard and all sorts of craziness. It's actually quite fun, and it's running through the current issues of Journey into Mystery and New Mutants. So check that out. I think if you want to wait for the trade, I think the trade's going to be out in September. So if you want to wait for that, but to get it all together, if you can't find the individual issues. But that'll be it. That's it for me.
All right, cool. Thank you, Tuffley.
Oh,
right,
quickly, before we continue, the cynical 13-year-old says hi from Twitter.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, cynical
13-year-old.
Yay.
All right. Who's next?
From here.
Let's see. I picked up a really cool art book. It is called On Ugliness, edited by Umberto Eco. It's an art book. It highlights all of the grotesques and ugly art throughout history. You have your Hans Holbeins, your Bruegel pictures. This thing is really cool. If you're an art aficionado or you're interested in art history, this is really a cool book to pick up. He's got another. No, this is actual artwork. Actually, there's a really cool section on the Dick Tracy villains. It runs the gamut of high art and even mid art and some comic book art. But it goes through the ages of, what people would, like the political characterizations of immigrants and stuff. That's covered in here. It's just really, really cool book if you're an art aficionado. It even has like the paintings of sort of the like the lycanthrop type people that are like the hairy people and stuff. There's a couple paintings mm-hmm. of like Lavinia Fontana, portrait of Antonetta. Back in 1594, and just all the weird posters and stuff. So this is a really cool book. He's also got one on beauty, which I don't have yet because, might as well go for the grotesque. Also picked up Hobgoblin by John Coyne. Anybody that has watched back in the late 70s, 80s, Monsters and Mazes, that movie is based on this book. So, a mom is trying to break her son's grip on D&D. So, yeah, Hobgoblin.
So do you read the book and just keep saying, "Bitch, get over yourself"?
Pretty much. Yeah.
And don't you just wish you could reach through the pages and just slap her silly?
Well, it's actually a novelized. It's not that one woman that wrote the thing about how D&D is bad. This is fully fictional, but it's just somebody. It's by John Coyne. It's like he picked out the really worst traits of D&D and like, oh, hey, I'll come up with this really cool story, So. I don't even know if this guy's writing anymore or whatever.
Well, so. what I always want to do with that book is I just want to reach in and go, it's not Flash Thompson. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I've never come across it. So I finally
looked it up in Wikipedia. Yeah.
No, don't even, it's not.
No, don't. I know it's, yeah.
Now, I usually say that for when we have obscure references. Just look it up on Wikipedia.
Okay. My zine pick of the week is Feedback. A little comic book zine. He talks about films like Critters. Also talks – it does a really cool – some really cover art from like books and stuff. Like he kind of does a really good rendition of Dead Zone and copies Jack Webb's Dragnet, sort of the VHS cover, and it covers a lot of movies like John Belushi's Neighbors, which I love that film, very underrated film. And there's a really bad drawing of Phantasm 2 in this, and a pretty good rendition of John Cleese in A Strange Case of the End of Civilization as We Know It. So this is actually the art in this is, it's bad, but it's not bad. It's actually kind of interesting. So find Feedback. Where is this? John Isaacson, and he's from Portland, Oregon. Another Portland pick for the zine pick. So I'm done. Ah, oh, fucker.
Dag.
What the fuck is wrong with you, John?
Well,
why it's still echoing. Is anyone else hearing it echo?
I am.
The soundboard blew up, actually.
All right, that's not right. Scott's dong is on the loose.
So, please put it back in the barn.
So to sum up what's been going on, folks, it should have been there was a dong where there should have been a ding.
Dong apocalypse. Christ Almighty! All right, so
that sounds like a blaxploitation film. We should have if we could just we could just get a Curtis Mayfield soundtrack.
Well,
they're
happy comparisons.
The slight racism came late in the show today.
Well, they're happy.
Jesus! All right, so
Rob, last week.
Oh God, Rob, what have you got? Get us out of here,
Pam,
please.
And Pam Grier is funny.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on.
I don't know where to start.
We can move on.
Bert, yeah, please. You're scaring me. What are you going to do if that thing ever breaks?
It just did. What, were you not paying attention?
It literally blew up. Yeah, right. So I want to recommend a zine, number two, actually, of this zine called Two with Water. And what's interesting about it is basically the cover is a vacuum mopping up the ugliest pill spill you have ever seen of like pills and rocks and Scrabble letters and M&Ms and just all kinds of crazy shit in it. And, the writing's pretty good in it. It's black and white. And, it's my zine pick. Two with water, number two.
What's it called?
Two with water.
Oh, okay. I'll look
and, it's just, I don't want to give anything away in the description of it other than it's really well executed and the design on it is the first thing you notice. But the stuff inside is actually golden. So I do want to recommend that. Then I want to recommend a book called The Other 80s from Me and Rocks by Martin Bradford. It's basically the other side of living in the Reagan era. So it gets away from like all the books on the 80s that are out now. Always deal on all the cutesy Rubik's Cube, Pac-Man, Atari, sort of pop culture aspects of the 80s. This looks at it from a more political, cultural content of like politics, art, social advancements, you know, and what stuff was being made during the 80s. And it's a really, really a good read. So I recommend that. And then I want to recommend, first of all, anything. If you can't get this one, get anything, for the love of fucking God. I want to recommend a book called Bradbury Speaks that came out in 2006.
Nice.
And it's a collection of Ray Bradbury just writing little things off the top of his head and little essays and short stories and just all kinds of things compiled into one thing. I cannot absolutely emphasize to anyone how much of an American treasure Ray Bradbury was.
Yeah,
and just how... And he was not just a science fiction writer. For anyone who practices the craft of writing or the craft of reading or appreciates good storytelling and an imagination should raise a pint or five to Ray Bradbury this week, because I will tell you this, we will not see anyone like this again. I mean, there are a few people in the world that when they die, you just feel a fucking kick in the balls or your gut. And, apparently there's a shitload of unreleased stuff that's going to be coming out.
I actually have a really cool book of his where it's all of his prayers and stuff for reverends and rabbis and stuff. I have that. It's a great book. Cool. So,
yeah, but the Bradbury Speaks kind of compiles like essays and some of that stuff. So it's a really good launching point for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and again, I mean, there's Fahrenheit 451. Yeah, there's the Martian Chronicles. Dandelion Wine is incredible. When there was an event here at Webster University where they had Ray Harryhausen and Bradbury both doing a presentation at the same time.
Nice.
So I had him sign my copy of Dandelion Wine.
Oh, fuck you.
I brought like five books with me, and I figured I could only get one. So I hand him Dandelion Wine. He goes, "What are those others do? Just resting?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to bother you. Just give me the damn books."
Oh, he is so awesome.
And he stayed after for an hour and a half with Harryhausen to answer questions. Oh, and then after a while, he started asking Harryhausen questions like, what would you do if the models fell apart? And he just looked at him and said, what would you do if you ran out of ink? You know, just those two together were just fucking golden. You know? And I cannot emphasize again, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Ray Bradbury, they are all gone. Writing and literature and American culture will not be the same. These illiterate fucks in the world have absolutely no idea who is lost.
No.
Who we've lost. It is absolutely...
And Rob, I was just going to say, as I mentioned somewhere, with Bradbury gone,
the coffee site was awesome, by the way.
Oh well, thank you. It's completely honest. I mean, if I had not read Zen and the Art of Writing, I don't know where I would be right now, because I mean that completely shaped my ability to come up with anything like a short story. Before it was just, I don't know what the fuck I was doing. It was ridiculous. But as I said somewhere, with Bradbury gone, anyone who does anything creative, we must now all step up and work twice as hard, because the overall creativity of the human race significantly dropped with him gone.
And there's
he even said that when you consider the amount of people. I mean, video games and stuff are fine, but he's like, there are a lot of people that are just wasting a lot of time, and he said that, you know, you know, you could be creating, you know, and there is an interesting book about us, the Americans, who, you know, there's the tinkerers and the you know, the people who were the inventors. Do we really have that, you know? So.
Yeah, and he was also, the thing that was great about him is that he also sort of had this attitude of like, it doesn't matter what you write. It doesn't matter if it's good, just write, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that someone who's had as much of success as he had was so down to earth, so good natured, and generally so honest. A thing I love about Bradbury is his writing is so honest. I mean, I tried to equate this to someone I know who's more of a music person and not a book person. You know, I said losing Bradbury is the musical equivalent of losing, you know, Lennon or Elvis.
Yeah. But
think of it, if his books were top 10 hits, you know, this would be on the front page. You know, I mean, to me, what's really sad is that the 900 million people watched the Whitney Houston funeral on fucking TV. The Ray Bradbury memorial service should actually be on television.
Yeah.
I know it sounds incredible because, I mean, he's fucking huge. I mean, it just absolutely frustrates me. But
on Twitter, I because I was just posting as much as possible on that day, and I did a hashtag on his name, and it was amazing on how many foreign language people were writing in about Bradbury that day. I mean, this guy is global.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you have to understand, there's a used bookstore there's a bookstore in Prague actually called The World. It's a English language bookstore, but they also sell books in other languages. And when you look at the sections of the different books they have, because obviously most of it's in English, but they have the other stuff in other American books and other translations. By far, his shelf was one of the biggest. You know, there's Twain and there's him and a few others, but his shelf was absolutely huge in terms of like just translated into languages. And I can't think of, I can't remember how many they said on this NPR piece, how many languages his stuff has been translated into. It's up there. And the thing I liked about the Bradbury Speaks is that it gives you a really nice broad sort of swath to look at what he does across the board. Whereas I would recommend everyone read Dandelion Wine or Illustrated Man or any of the other novels. But if you don't have time for that, at least get this. Because it's a really good companion for it. And I think it's also a really solid, standalone, sort of an introduction to the writer as well. So
I would say October Country, because that was like an offshoot of Dark Carnival, which was the first Arkham House book of his.
Yes.
So, but that's right. I met him at Dragon Con in 98, I think, when he was there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I actually spent money to go to that horrible dinner just so I, were you, did you hang out afterwards? It was so great because, you know, people were able to,
afterwards was better than the dinner.
Yes. Yes. Hands down. It was awesome. Cause I was able to get, I got Death is a Lonely Business signed. Cause it was like the only first edition copy of his I had. So I was like, can you sign this? So, and I got my photo with him. So I was so freaking thrilled. It was great.
And he was so nice.
He was awesome.
You know, awesome. So, I'm still feeling that. So sorry about the lecture on that. I didn't mean to go over. Really quickly, though, there is also what may well be the best record of the year so far. This band called Crocodiles called Endless Flowers. If you're a fan of like early Echo and the Bunnymen or early Pixies or that type of stuff, it's really, really pretty great. It's nice. And then there's a very, very, very strange band I want to recommend finally called K-Holes. Their album is called Dysmania. It is the closest thing to an old school punk rock record I've heard in a very long time. There's X numbers of like the Black Lips in it, some other people, but it is, it's like a punk rock record with saxophones. You know,
hello.
The easiest way for me to describe it is if Black Flag played with Fishbone, this is what it would sound like.
Oh shit. So, What's it called, Rob?
K-Holes. It's got this sort of like, I mean, it's got horns. It doesn't sound very Fishbone-y. It's very loud. It's
okay.
It's very grimy and smeary.
Sounds
and,
great.
Ugly. And
yes.
it's like if you got punched in the face and there was a saxophone playing, this is what it would sound like. So
basically, Rocks, yeah, you're gonna want them on the you're gonna want them on your biopic soundtrack. It sounds like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I might add, you know, I couldn't describe records enough for Spin to get higher. So anyway, that is my recommendations. Ray fucking Bradbury. It's your homework.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Cool.
Pete.
Sorry.
Thanks, Rob. No, don't be sorry. Don't be sorry. I'm glad you brought it up.
Hey, can I point out something real quick?
Yeah, of course.
So last week I did the thing where I recommended Unity because it was $2.99.
Yeah.
So this week, and I just looked, it turns out, I swear to God, the Superfly soundtrack from Curtis Mayfield is one of the $2.99 things this week on the MP3
what?
Store. So,
what?
Woohoo!
All right.
So there you go.
Cool.
Superfly. Go get.
But everyone should buy that too, for the love of God.
And, yes, and the Footloose soundtrack is available for $2.99.
And the what soundtrack?
Footloose.
Footloose.
That's an awful soundtrack.
As well as the very best of Daryl Hall and John Oates.
As well as the Don Johnson record.
Christ. All right, so.
But Curtis Mayfield, go get.
Yes, that definitely.
Along with Daryl Hall and John Oates.
So, John, are those your recommendations? That.
Sure. Actually,
it's now your turn.
I got to recommend this thing that I don't know if you guys have seen it. But my wife and I finally saw it the other night. You guys probably haven't heard of it or anything. It's called Game of Thrones. Hello. 3 years ago, I'm calling you. yes, that's
no, we're not doing that shit either.
Nice.
What's that reference to?
Nothing.
Something.
Yeah, so that is literally what I am recommending to people, because this audience will never. I am the only person left in this audience that has not seen Game of Thrones.
Actually, I'm halfway through season one.
Oh, well, see, there you go. You're right there with me.
Yeah.
I'm only two episodes in. My wife.
I'm only on season one of Mad Men, but now I know how the last season ends.
Now you can buy it on Amazon. Yes, Amazon Video, Instant View, whatever you call it, or Amazon even. But we chose the chicken the thrifty way out, and actually just went ahead and ordered HBO for 1 month. We're watching it all on demand, then canceling HBO again.
Nice.
So, because it's 20.
Oh my God, I should totally. John.
Yes.
You are fucking visionary.
Well, you know, it's $16 for to rent. I can't believe it's $16 for HBO. For
you know, HBO,
or...
if you offered Go as a separate subscription service, this would not be happening.
Tell me about it.
Thank you.
And what, you know, the thing is, here, I go from a rant here real quick. The thing they don't get about it, and they're like, well, we need those cable subscribers. No, you don't understand. The people that want Go are never going to order your cable service.
No.
Yeah.
They just want you to get give us Go for, say, $10 a month. Or maybe cheaper, if possible. For $10 a month, we'll buy it. That's $10 you didn't have in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh,
God. Yep. I agree.
Anyway, that's what we're doing.
HBO DVD sales need to go down a hell of a lot more before that'll happen.
Holy crap, I know.
Well, that's my point. It's $28 for the Amazon season, or $16 if you get HBO and just do it on demand.
Well, my thing is, well, go ahead, Rob.
No, I was going to say, I have a friend of mine who has HBO, and then he's got a burner. So basically, he just hands me a disc every couple weeks here. So I ain't paying for that. I mean, like, John, I'm not fucking paying for it. Sorry.
Well, basically, I've heard what some people are doing, or like just giving each other their HBO Go passwords.
Yeah.
And just letting people use their HBO Go stuff. I that is not me. I'm not doing that.
You would not do that because you are moral scruple. Because
you're a good man, Toughly.
Well, I'm not, but I'm just not doing that.
Toughly. I just said you're a good man. Take it.
Rocks. Toughly. Rocks. He ain't doing that shit. Okay.
I know.
I do have a question for Toughly though, real quick. Is this a zero or an O? I can't tell on your password here.
Shh, John, we don't talk about what's in the chat.
Sorry.
What's in the Weekend Justice chat stays in the Weekend Justice chat.
Unless we're in Vegas.
Unless it's in the script. All right. So, no, I mean, the only problem I have with all the streaming stuff and this is that, you know, I will say that the Blu-ray has some really great commentaries on it. The commentary with the Stark kids is worth the price of admission. Especially because you get to hear the kid who plays Bran and the two girls who, of course, went to King's Landing. And it's just like, oh, I wasn't there for that. Oh, yeah, well, we were there and it was great. I just had to lay in a bed with furs on and not fall asleep. That was great. Yeah. So the commentary is really good. But yes, Game of Thrones is most excellent. So, all right. So, John, is that you?
Yeah, I think that's it. I was just trying to remember where I should go if I wanted to buy the Blu-ray, though.
Well, if you wanted to buy the Blu-ray, John, I'm glad you asked that. The thing you would probably do is you would go, not probably, you would definitely do this. You would go to needcoffee.com/Amazon, and then you would save that URL that I just said, needcoffee.com/Amazon, because no matter what you buy from Amazon, if you go through that link, we get credit for it. And we not only get a percentage of what you spend, but the more you buy, no matter what the price is, the percentage goes up. So it doesn't matter what somebody I saw. I was just looking at the Amazon report. Somebody bought like a third party book for a penny. Guess what? That does help because that takes us towards the next percentage level. Doesn't matter what it is. So whether you're buying Amazon Instant Video stuff, whether you're buying Blu-rays, DVDs, doesn't matter. Do it through that, needcoffee.com/Amazon, and it is all very helpful.
Which, I have a question. And yes! Actually, it's Scott wanted me to ask you this. You don't judge, though, do you?
No, never.
Okay, so based on, you don't look at people's things and figure out that, you know, that double-sided dildo really was for...
I can't see who ordered that.
That's what everyone else on the podcast is for the judging.
That's right. But I can't see. No, and just to be clear, I can't see who orders what. So whatever you order, I don't care.
So if I do order my very best of Daryl Hall and John Oates and Footloose soundtrack,
I won't know it's you. They'll judge. I won't.
Okay.
Because every time someone buys crap music, Tuffy and I get cosmic pangs of angst. And a little of us died.
I thought that was heartburn for some reason. So
The Tums is not helping.
I should re-examine that.
Every time bad music's bought, an angel dies.
Although, if you have to buy One Direction, for the love of God, buy it from Need Copy so Widget gets the money.
Thank you. All right, so...
Superfly, $2.99, I'm just saying.
There you go. That helps, and it's excellent music. And it takes away the sting of parts of Rob and Tuffley dying, whether it's heartburn or not. So,
which is absolutely not heartburn, as it turns
out. Actually, everyone likes Tuffley, so he probably has heartburn. I probably have the dying. So.
All right, so for my recommendations, I've got two things. First, I will say that I finally saw the Ralph Fiennes Coriolanus, which was interesting. Oh. It was very interesting. It was very Shakespearean. He was very Shakespearean. Yes. So it was good. However, while I enjoyed it, and I recommend you seek it out and give it a rental, I would actually recommend another modern-day pseudo-interpretation of Shakespeare instead, and that would be the Patrick Stewart Scottish play Macbeth that he did.
Was this one with Judi Dench?
No.
That was Ian McKellen. Never mind.
Yeah. No, this is the one where it's sort of set in a pseudo World War I sort of setting.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah.
And the entire thing takes place underground in a bunker. It's really sort of amazing and fascinating. So I would highly recommend that because that's a great deal of fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, no, I would check that out. It is available on DVD and on Amazon Instant Video as well. And the other thing that I would recommend along those lines is what we said earlier, which is the David Tennant, Patrick Stewart, Hamlet, which is really, really good.
David Warner's great in it.
What's that?
And I think David Warner is also very good in that.
David Warner's in that one?
Isn't David Warner in that? No, he's not. Never mind.
I don't think so. No, I think it's just two of them.
Do you?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, never mind.
Do you want me to
I'm crossing the streams.
Do you that's want me okay. to Do you want me to play a sample?
No, that's okay. That's all right.
Sure.
But no.
Because I really want to.
No, it's okay. But no. So that one is really excellent. It is also updated into some timeless modern day type of thing. And it's really good. Tenet is really good. So I recommend that. And I will say that, I'm pretty sure it's on the DVD as well, but the commentary on that is quite excellent because basically what they did was they had done it on the stage for a while and then came back after 6 months, re-blocked it for film, and then just shot it. So it's sort of pretty incredible that they were able to do that like they did. So really cool. So... that brings us to the end of another marathon episode of Weekend Justice. Thank you for listening. I think it is time on Weekend Justice, just like every week, that we should all say, I'm not doing this shit.
I'm not doing this shit. I'm going home. Oh, I am home.
All right, I jacked up just a little bit.
You know, I've thought about it. I think I am going to do this shit.
Oh,
you son of a bitch.
I'm not doing it.
Inconsistent, Tuffley.
I really want to play the sample.
Well, you're welcome. I had 3 hours to think about it. So.
Oh, well, I guess that makes sense.
It's contemplation and conviction.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah. That's what you say.
Mm-hmm. And heartburn.
And death.
And circus peanuts.
Yep.
And snozzages.
Yeah,
that's what's going to be in the goodie bags that we get at Dragon Con this year.
Oh, circus peanuts!
It's sausages.
Circus peanuts.
Yeah, yep. like that
circus peanuts.
Like help.
They're horrible, actually.
along with regret and recriminations.
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that a New Order album?
Or not a bee?
What?
That is the question.
Who are you playing?
The second letter of the alphabet,
oh,
or some other merry letter. Be or not a bee. This letter doth have a stiff, straight back.
Oh my God, don't talk about fonts. Word, we'll be sued by that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, don't describe fonts.
It's Patrick Stewart doing
apparently you can't describe the events of Dark Skies or Falling Skies.
Yes.
Something Skies. On TNT.
Yes.
You know, I hear toughly that Grace guys are going to clear up, so put on a happy face.
Oh my gosh, you know what? I'll redo the cover of Derelict and use that font that guy has.
Oh, God.
Oh, Rox, we'll give you multiple covers.
Oh, Jesus.
John,
are we going to have trading cards, too? Are we going to have chromium covers?
No.
It's important. It's important that we hold that shit off till the second printing.
That's right. Yes. When the price goes up.
No, I think what happens is every year that you put out an issue of the zine, you always start over with issue number one. Every issue is number one.
Oh, although, yeah. You know, it'd be funny just randomly inside the zines, just find like the Boom Boom card from X-Force number one and just put that in randomly.
Oh, okay.
Boom. Wow.
Actually, Ross, I've got a stack of wacky packies we can use.
Hey, those are decorating a wall.
Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Hi there. Many of you know me as the half-assed engineer John on Need Coffee's Weekend Justice podcast. But what most of you don't know is that before I was internationally known by tens of people, I was a patient at the Sleep Deprivation Institute, known as NeedCoffee.com. NeedCoffee.com has provided me and many of you with hundreds of hours of therapy through engaging rants, dreamcasts, reviews, contests, news of the offbeat and cool, and of course, more information about caffeine than was really necessary. Why, without Need Coffee, I might have actually seen Starship Troopers 4 bugging out. Thank you, Need Coffee, for saving me from that fate. Now, all this goodness does come at a cost, so the fine folks at Need Coffee are asking for your help. Please head over to needcoffee.com/memberships to learn what you can do to keep this invaluable resource alive. Your contribution not only will allow for more great content and more chances to win free shit, but it might just save a kitten. So as you sit there, listening to this podcast, this free podcast, sipping on your $8 Café de Frou-Frou, think about what you could have done with that money instead. Sure, you could have donated to some worthy cause, or you could keep Need Coffee and kittens alive. Your choice. Visit needcoffee.com/memberships for more details. Oh, crap. Did I record that?
And here's Dakota.
Okay, so,
I feel an agenda coming on.
I don't want to do that shit.
Who can blame you?